by school district school board. We're beginning at 5 o'clock today. We really appreciate everyone joining us a little bit early in light of the election. It gives us all a little time to get home and see what's going on later, so we appreciate that. We did not have closed session this evening. We're going straight into open session. Our first item is the consensus on order of business, and I would like to make a proposal, please, if the board would agree to that. And that is that in order to make sure that we have the most people, in case there are some who aren't joining us until 6 o'clock, I would request that we rearrange a couple of things, primarily to move our action consent agenda up to immediately after our presentations, to move that to after 4.02, after the Sinsheimer presentation. And that way, that just means that our kind of the meat of the meeting will begin a little bit later. Is that acceptable? Is that okay? All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. All right, so then we have approval of minutes from our meeting of October 20th, 2020. Any comments?
I'll move approval.
Great, Walt, thank you. Evelyn, are you seconding? Okay, we have a motion by Walt and a second by Evelyn. Chris?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Catherine?
Yes.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Evelyn?
Yes.
And me, yes. Thank you very much. All right. So our next item is student...
The translation.
Thank you. I forgot an important piece here.
I apologize.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for reminding me. All right. This meeting, we do have translation available, and if you are interested in listening to the meeting in Spanish, please go to the bottom of your screen. Jeremy, back me up. Let me know if I'm not correct. And you'll see a globe, and click on that, and you will be in for translation.
Buenas tardes, bienvenidos a todos. Esta sesión del consejo está siendo interpretada al español. Si quieren los servicios del intérprete, por favor, en la barra inferior de la pantalla van a ver un globo terráqueo junto a donde dice participantes. Por favor, después de que termine yo de hablar, la pueden seleccionar y elegir español.
Thank you very much, and thank you to our translators. They were very hard during this meeting to make sure that to enable more participants to be here. All right. So next is our student representatives to the board. I think I saw Ben, and I think Rosalie is here. Is that correct? So Ben, you want to go first?
Yeah, of course. So we just came off of our homebound week. It was in place of homecoming week this week at Slow High. It was a fun time. We had a lot of dress-up days and days for everyone to participate virtually. And also a fun additional activity was our first in-person activity. It was at the drive-in on Tuesday night last week. We invited everyone to come out to the drive-in and have a safe, socially distanced night. Wearing masks, and the turnout was actually a lot better than we thought to be, and it was a super fun time. And next week, so that was kind of like a wrap in homebound week, and then next week on Saturday we have this thing called a scavenger hunt where it's going to be around Slow for 2 hours, and everyone's obviously socially distanced with masks, and everyone's going to walk around from spot to spot. So say like Bubblegum Alley, the Slow High School pool, just different spots, take pictures there, and then upload them to Google Classroom. And then the person with the most uploads will win prizes provided by the ASB. So it's going to be green, kind of like without cars. It's all going to be walking and within a certain time frame. So that'll be really fun. But yeah, just coming off Homebound Week is our, that's kind of mainly what was going on at Slow High.
Great. Thank you. Thanks so much. All right. And is Rosalie here? Okay.
Is she here?
Yeah, there she
is. There
you
are. Yes, I am. Hi.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm actually in the middle of a run. I forgot this was at 5, so I'm just hopping on real quick.
No, just Zoom meetings, right?
Yeah.
I guess it's no excuse, but you can be anywhere. So.
Yeah. So kind of what we have going on Moore Bay is we recently did we had a Spirit Week the other week, and then next week we have Food Week. So we have a bunch of stuff where kids are, like, sitting in front of us and making dishes. And then we have a cook-along class with one of our teachers on Friday. That's going to be, like, a Zoom activity thing. And then we also have Thankful Week coming up, which we're super stoked for. We're having kids have, like, canned turkey competitions and just, like, cute little fun stuff like that. And in December, we're planning on having a variety show where kids can show off all their, like, weird, quirky little talents. So we have, like, someone doing yo-yoing. We have someone figuring out how to, like, combine saxophone and duet through Zoom to do that, saxophone and singing duet. And then in addition to that, some of our clubs have been doing some super cool stuff. Interact is doing a canned food drive this week. We have a community cleanup club that has been doing, like, socially distant beach cleanups, which I think is, like, a great opportunity for clubs to be able to be doing that too. So we have, like, a bunch of cool little things going on right now. We're trying to get ready for the big things, figuring out how homecoming is going to work with all of that next semester, whether it's virtual or whatever. But, yeah, that's kind of what we got cooking over at Moore Bay. Thank you for listening.
Great. Thank you. Rosalie, be sure and let us know when the variety show is.
Yes.
Oh, I absolutely will.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks very much. All right. Next, we have the Sinsheimer Elementary Program Highlights.
Well, Ellen, because we posted the agenda, we asked Sinsheimer if they wouldn't mind moving it to the next board agenda meeting.
Oh, okay, great. That's fine. We'll look forward to that.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. So then in that case, we are going to go then through the action consent items. So please let me know if you'd like anything pulled. It feels so strange to be doing this at this time. All right, so this is item 9.01, disposal of surplus, 9.02, approval of warrants and payroll, 9.03, new copier lease, 9.04, approval of certificated and classified personnel items, 9.05, approval of furniture and equipment request. 9.06, approval of purchase orders and Cal card purchases. 9.07, proposed revisions to board policy 3100 budget second reading. 9.08, proposed revisions to board policy 3515.4, recovery for property loss or damage second reading. 9.09, proposed revisions to board policy 3551, food service operations cafeteria fund, second reading. 9.10, proposed revisions to board policy 5145.7, sexual harassment, second reading. And 9.11, proposed revisions to board policy 6145.6, international exchange, second reading. So, could I have a motion on that, please?
So moved.
Thank you, Chris.
Second.
And Catherine is seconding. We have a motion by Chris, a second by Catherine. Mark?
Yes.
Catherine?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Evelyn?
Yes.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Walter?
Yes.
And I am yes as well. So that is the unanimous passage of that. And so now let me get all back on track. All right, next is correspondence. And at the time, agenda was published, the following official correspondence has been received. Callie, and please excuse mispronunciations of names. Callie Bowler, distance learning concerns. Erin Nagel, letter to reopen in January. Liz Wilson, letter regarding school reopening. Megan Whiteson, letter regarding school reopening. Stan Yoshinubo, letter regarding school reopening. Tirtza Abon, letter regarding school reopening. Devin Kun Choi et al., reopening questions. And Lena Egan, equity and advanced classes needed now, advanced life science courses in high school. And these are all now part of the official record of this meeting. So we will now go on to public comment with regard to general public comment. And at this point in our agenda, the board welcomes comments on matters of district interest. Please be advised that the board cannot engage in discussion or take action in items not listed on the agenda. And this is typically at 5.02 is for items not listed on the agenda, or you can make a choice to have to speak now or have items read now. These are items to be emailed and read at the meeting, need to be received by 3 p.m. on the day prior to the meeting. Although, because of the topic of the school reopening being of such great interest, we have been accepting those letters a little bit later. If you submit written comments on a topic, you will not be allowed to also speak on that topic. Also, please be advised that comments or correspondence submitted anonymously will not be accepted. We will ask when you speak at public comment to please identify yourself. And if you wish to speak, there is an icon on your screen, the raise your hand. And if you do that, we will keep track of who's raising hands, and we will then call on you as close to order received as possible. Also, there's an icon that is a thumbs up or thumbs down, and if you agree or disagree, you can indicate at that time. And if others speak to your, that's a good way to indicate that you support a speaker or a letter writer, and then perhaps not feel the need to be repetitive. We will announce the thumbs up and thumbs down after each comment. So first I have a couple to read under 5.02 that were submitted, and then we'll go to those who are present. This is from Russ Walter. We want our son back in school. Is that going to happen? Should I protest in front of the school? Would that help? Life is a choice. Every day we choose to put ourselves at risk in a car, on a bike, and more. California flattened the curve many months ago. That was the deal, not new cases nor community spread. We did it. The tents in front of French Hospital were built and quietly taken down because they weren't needed. The crisis created via the shutdown is more people getting sick and dying than COVID-19. Open the schools, please. We have traveled to other states to play baseball since June. It's amazing to behold the difference between those places and here. Freedom rings in these places while we are hiding behind the veil of safety to oppress and deny our children the chance to pursue their dreams. And why? teachers' unions like those in LA that will only return to the classroom if we all get free health care and the police get defunded. Unreal. People are leaving in droves because of how this state is being run, and that trickles down to how our schools are also being run. Our rights and freedoms are being stripped before our eyes. We are done. Open the schools, please. Before I read the next one, I also want to just remind everyone that you have 3 minutes in which to speak. We have a timekeeper. We keep close time, and anything submitted in writing cannot be longer than 450 words. Okay, next we have Callie Baller. My name is Callie Baller. I have 3 students in PK, first and third grade at C.L. Smith. Over the last 7 months, I have witnessed my children struggle to navigate the burdens of this pandemic. Due to my background in mental health, master's degree in clinical and counseling psychology, I am especially concerned with how this pandemic has impacted our children emotionally. Both of my young boys are struggling tremendously with virtual learning. I've watched these 2 bright and gifted students quickly deteriorate over the last 2 months. It breaks my heart to watch their love of learning disappear right before my eyes, but most concerning, they are showing worrisome signs of anxiety and depression. My family is privileged in that I am a stay-at-home parent, we have access to resources, and we have a stable home life. I recognize that this is a luxury, and many children within our community have dramatically different circumstances. If my kids are struggling, it pains me to think about how less fortunate children are surviving. While I do believe in the innate resiliency of our youth, I don't feel that we can continue to use this as an excuse to overlook the long-term mental health implications that continued distance learning will result in. We are going on 8 months of this, and I am certain that the social-emotional impact of keeping children out of school will be something that will follow this generation for years to come. I refuse to settle for the argument that this is the very best we can do. They deserve better. We need to get these children back into the classroom ASAP while allowing those at risk to isolate and stay home. Other schools within our community are doing it. I am confident that we can too. The dedicated teachers at Smith are doing all they can to teach and support our children, but they have been tasked with an impossible job. So much of the learning experience just cannot be done virtually. Put simply, they are putting in 300% more work for our children to retain 90% less. The love that we felt from our school during this difficult time has been one of the only motivations to continue crawling through the trenches. They keep us going every single day. As you make your decision on whether or not to send students back to school, I respectfully and desperately urge you to consider the mental health implications that your decision will have on these children. Thank you for your hard work and continued investment in our children. Rob Morrow. Hello, we have kindergarten, second grader, and fourth grader. We ask you to give us the choice to allow them to return in person to school. Schools in our county, state, and country have shown that kids, especially the youngest, can return to school safely with low community numbers, masks, and teacher protections. Our kids are suffering. In our opinion, the damage being done to the kids through remote learning outweighs the lower risks of returning to school. Our second grader has switched to private school, and he is thriving right now. Our kindergartner is doing so poor emotionally, despite having one of the best teachers in the district, that we plan to pull her if in-person schooling does not return in January. We know we are lucky that my wife can sacrifice her career to oversee our kids' education full-time. I believe that the board and leadership across the district has broken the trust of its primary customers, the children. Words and actions over the last few months rarely acknowledge the impacts of remote learning and focus on undefined safe conditions. As a longtime public school and union supporter, I fear the damage done by the district's and school leadership's words and actions will turn support permanently against both in the future. We ask you to take the first step in restoring trust by allowing our children the choice to return to school in person. Thank you. Okay. And then, is there anyone who would like, anyone in the audience, anyone watching who would like to speak at this time?
Yeah, perfect. Angela Avila would like to speak.
Angela Avila?
Hi. Dear school board, I am both a parent and a student. I have a student at Morro Bay High School, and I'm a teacher at Los Osos Middle School, so I'll be sharing both my perspective that my husband and I have and one I have as a teacher regarding the reopening. As parents of a Morro Bay High School student, my husband and I would like to see our daughter be back in school. However, moving to a hybrid approach will still be hard, and we wonder if it'll be worth it. She will most likely be spending a lot of her time on the computer, as there can be no shared materials or equipment, and will be listening to her teachers talk while they are wearing a mask and or a face shield. There's no guarantee her small group of friends will be attending the same time she does. Her schedule may be changed, and just getting to her school or picking her up will be tricky, as there is no busing, and we do not have a reliable carpool set up to get her from Los Osos to Morro Bay. Furthermore, what will happen once all these logistics are worked out and students and staff become sick? Will all these changes be for nothing if cases go up and we need to go back to online learning? And now my hat is as a teacher. And this is taken from a collective letter that other members from Loans and I have written. We, the teaching staff at Los Osos Middle School, are not satisfied with any of the proposals we have seen for reopening school in January. We are partners with students, parents, and staff in the process of returning to in-school only if it is ethically based on the science of this virus. Our 7th and 8th grade science teachers have devoted 2 weeks of instruction to making our students scientifically literate about the latest findings of COVID-19. Please consider our concerns. These are our issues for our staff. Mask wearing enforcement. Concerns equate to the manner in which mask wearing will be monitored for all students, families, and staff. Additionally, certain groups of students are not required to wear masks, which leaves us feeling uncomfortable about returning. Spacing. Our classrooms cannot hold one half of our class allotment spaced 6 feet apart. This is especially egregious in our PE classes, where they also face the issue of inclement weather and air quality. Other staff members will continue reading from this part of the letter, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else this time?
Ames Harris.
Ames Harris.
Good evening. I am also a teacher at Los Osos Middle School, and so I want to continue on with what Ms. Avila just read. We, the teaching staff at Los Osos Middle School, are not satisfied with any proposals we have seen for reopening school in January. We are partners with students, parents, and staff in this process of returning to in-person school only if it is ethically based on the science of this virus. Our 7th and 8th grade science teachers have devoted 2 weeks of instruction to making our students scientifically literate about the latest findings on COVID-19. Please consider our concerns. We are deeply concerned for the health and safety of teachers, support staff, and, of course, our students. Research shows that hospitals, airplanes, and schools are the primary areas for superspreading this disease. 61,000 students last week, 61,000 children last week were diagnosed with COVID-19. Our staff has heard that the current plan leaves paraeducators and support staff without adequate protection as they work to assure students are safe. The soft launch of students back on campus brought this point to our attention. Thank you.
And just a friendly reminder, if you'd like to speak, click on the participants icon on the bottom of your screen, and then the side panel will pop up, and you can click on the raise your hand icon. So I'll give a couple seconds. Perfect. More people will raise their hand. Here we go. Brooke Siegler.
Hi, my name is Brooke Segler, and I'm speaking this evening wearing two hats, one as a parent and then as a teacher. First, my gravest concern as a parent of a fourth grader at Baywood and an eighth grader at Loams is the frequently used phrase, to the extent possible, when referring to 6 feet of distance from others. 6 feet is the standard in the United States. Every business has signs posted that expect 6 feet to be maintained between clients and workers alike. Why would we allow for less when it comes to our children? We have seen other nations combat COVID more successfully than the United States. They have done it by writing clear policies with strict regulations and then adhering to those policies faithfully. Allowing for less than 6 feet between students by including the language to the extent possible sets up San Luis Coastal for failure. And now I'm switching to my teacher hat and adding my voice to the chorus of my colleagues from Los Osos Middle School. We, the teaching staff of Los Osos Middle School, are not satisfied with any proposals we have seen for reopening in January. One of our concerns is supervision of students. Throughout the day, while entering and exiting classrooms, students need to be strictly organized and supervised. We feel ill at ease with the current proposed plan for handling these student interactions. Secondly, we're very concerned about airflow. The buildings at our site were built between 1970 and 1980, and the airflow systems have not been updated since that time. We are very concerned that the teachers in our oldest buildings, specifically Building E with the louvered windows, have no external airflow and or extremely inadequate airflow. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next is Becca Banfield.
Hi there. My name is Becca Banfield, and I am a parent of four children in this district. I have a fifth grader at Teach, a second grader and kinder student at Pacheco, and a special needs three-year-old enrolled at Baywood's PEAT program. Education is a priority in our home, and I have a great love and respect for the incredible teachers in our district. Despite the efforts of amazing teachers, online learning is ineffective for our younger learners. It just isn't working. My special needs preschooler is receiving almost zero functional support from the district right now, simply because Zoom learning doesn't work for a delayed three-year-old. The speech therapy resources he was supposed to receive at PEEP are now non-existent for him. My dual immersion kinder and second grade children trudge for hours on screens with limited personal feedback regarding their language acquisition. Beyond ineffective, online learning is damaging for younger learners. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention stated in July of 2020 that, quote, the harms attributed to closed schools on the social, emotional, and behavioral health, economic well-being, and academic achievement of children in both the short and long term are well known and significant. Further, the lack of in-person educational options disproportionately harms low-income and minority children and those living with disabilities. The best available evidence from countries that have opened schools indicates that COVID-19 poses low risks to school-aged children, at least in areas with low community transmission, and suggests that children are unlikely to be major drivers of the spread of the virus. Reopening schools creates opportunity to invest in the education, well-being, and future of one of America's greatest assets, our children, while taking every precaution to protect students, teachers, staff, and all their families. Close quote. I have emailed each of our board members a petition with upward of 240 signatures of community members and parents who are begging you, against pressures to do otherwise, to please open our schools as soon as possible. Beyond the well-being of our children, we are worried for the well-being of our district and teachers. Parents are finding alternative options to educate their children. A delay in reopening will only pull more parents from the district, decrease your funding, and result in inevitable teacher layoffs. We've been steeped in this pandemic long enough to have a decent hold on the general risks of the virus. We also know the risks involved with keeping our schools closed and are already experiencing the devastating results of that. We are too smart to let this go on any longer. We can open our schools in a way that is safe enough, at least by January, and especially for our preschoolers and K-2 children. We want to see our district succeed and thrive. We need to see our children succeed and thrive. And despite opposition you might be receiving during your negotiations, we are counting on you to hear us and reopen schools.
Thank you. Thanks. All right. Our next speaker is Karen O'Donnell.
Thank you. I speak as a teacher at Los Osos Middle School. We, the teaching staff of Los Osos Middle School are not satisfied with any of the proposals we have seen for reopening school in January. Another of our concerns, as you have heard some already, is implementation. Due to past events and situations, we lack the trust needed to partner in this reopening plan at our site. A history of events at Los Osos Middle School has created a concern for safety of staff and enforcement of school rules. Another issue is communication. Parent support is crucial. We are concerned that all parents will not be aware of new procedures, protocols, and expectations. Our experience is that Parent Square has not always been effective. What is the plan for parent communication? As a teacher of students with special needs, my recent experience with potential COVID cases in my own in-person classroom was not satisfactory. What is the communication chain for sending students and staff home and approving the return to campus? Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next is Laurie Hartwell.
Hello, I'm a parent of a second grader at C.L. Smith Elementary. And while I am in favor of going back to in-person school, my one concern with the plan is coming back right after the holiday with people traveling and possibly being exposed with no time for isolation or quarantine. So I would like to maybe have you consider starting later in January, the in-person portion of the school, but I do understand how important it is to have our students back in person for all students. Thanks.
Thank you. Right, we're just checking to see if anyone else wishes to address the board at this time. Okay. Yeah. Next is Jen Lertwachara. Excuse me if I mispronounced your name.
You did a really good job, A+. So just listening to these different divergent opinions in these letters, it really becomes clear to me. I'm one who has three children. We're doing good on distance learning, but my children are also older, and I think that makes a difference. I have a high schooler, a middle schooler, and a fourth grader. But the onus of responsibility to make teachers and parents feel safe is on our school administration. And as I mentioned in a comment last board meeting, they are not inspiring confidence. That the last board meeting was 2 weeks ago, and they had just gotten their health and safety person and just started scoping out classrooms. I guess want to emphasize the point that they need to be really good at PR, not hiring a PR firm, but they need to sell this plan that they can open safely. My other concern was that they dusted off this B1, B2 hybrid plans that were made like before any data on any other opening schools were made. There's been so much going on and so much more information about how to safely open schools. That's something they should be getting out to us. They need to prove the point to the teachers, to the parents. We're doing this and this and this and this, and it's going to be safe, and we are up on all the data, and we're, you know, doing our best to get it done. And I know that it's hard, and I know distance learning, they went all in, and I appreciate that. It's been actually very good for us. But the school administrators and administration needs to sell their plan. It feels very kind of piecemeal to me. And I'd love to know how they're doing their research, why they're still using hybrid plans B1 and B2. And anyway, I think that it can be done safely. I'm concerned that our administration doesn't have the resources or the time to do what's necessary to make it open safely. But I definitely think it can and should be done. But they need to, show us that it can. And I'm concerned because Thanksgiving and Christmas break are coming up. There's very little time. And that's my comment.
Thank you. Next is Amanda Camelli.
Thank you. Thank you for your consideration tonight. My name is Amanda Camelli, and I'm currently a senior at Harvey High School. I understand and acknowledge the importance of practicing safe procedures and the mounting concern that has been brought to attention tonight. I'm hoping to share from my perspective what these past few months have been like. I have always been a very good student, but I find myself almost drowning in my work. I'm well-versed in the world of technology, yet I find myself struggling, in the online format. My grades are worse than they ever have been, and I feel as though my thoughts are growing darker and my disposition is becoming more and more anxious. Last week, I saw my friend lose someone she loved and went to school with die from suicide. I feel like mentally these months online have had a very detrimental effect on all of us, even in high school. And I feel as though there must be some safe method in which we can return.
Thank you. Thank you, Amanda, very much. It appears that we have no one else wishing to address this right now. So with that, we will move on to our superintendent's updates. And first is item 6.01, business and budget update.
Yeah, just a couple of quick things for the board to know. We have our auditor here in town this week, actually through Zoom and working with our staff to go through our audit. Today I was a member, and I am a member of the Citizen Treasury Oversight Committee. So we have our annual meeting today to talk about investments, the impact of markets on interest and, budgets throughout the county. So it was a great meeting, good information. The county, of course, does a fantastic job of managing in, all of the resources in the county, and so very safely. And then lastly, I have interviews for Julie Lang's position next week. So we have some good candidates to bring forward. So I look forward to finding somebody suitable to follow in Julie's footsteps and excited about that. And then we will also be interviewing for Mandy's position. So as Ms. Dawson moved over to the executive assistant or the superintendent, we have that position open. So those will be a couple of positions that we'll be filling soon.
Thank you. Ryan, you're going to have some new people.
Yes.
Thank you. Next is educational services update and COVID-19. Kim, is this, what do you have for us?
Thank you. I'm going to keep this part short since we have quite the update on my part on both of those topics here in a little bit. I did just want to do a quick shout out on a couple of things. We did start all of our pre-K and transitional kindergarten this week. I want to say that site administrators, teachers, and everyone that goes into making a really safe and welcoming opening for all of the families and parents went really well. We did lots of parent updates, including a video that I want to say a big thanks to CL Smith teachers and administrators for putting time in to really demonstrate how they are utilizing the safety precautions in order to create a welcoming but still safe environment for the kiddos. So thank you so much to Sandy Emmerich, to Aaron Black, to Deb Maxwell, et cetera, at CL Smith for doing a fabulous job with the video so that people really felt informed and felt comfortable. We also did a parent forum for the parents involved, and they were able to ask real specific questions and get their questions answered so that everyone there felt really comfortable. I had a principal, Mr. Block from Bishop's Peak, had a fantastic email from a parent that when their TK student got home, they asked him how things were going. They said it was the most excited they had seen the kiddo in a long time. And he said, "Miss Littner, hit it out of the park." I loved that. So that makes us all of our days, right, when we see those little ones so excited to be there and engaged in that kind of learning. And congrats to Miss Littner for hitting it out of the park. Another just quick positive thing, iInnovate has been amazing. As you know, this is a partnership between the school district and the Education Foundation. They did a real pivot in this time of COVID-19, although we got an amazing $1 million donation to create iInnovate labs at every single elementary school. They said, you know what, how can we still bring hands-on innovative ideas and opportunities to our elementary kids? So with the help of Buildings, Grounds, and Transportation, they've been putting together more than 4,000 boxes every month and distributing those to kids and families for them to have some hands-on experiences. I also want to say to them that they did an amazing job at collecting guest speakers that I encourage you, if you have the opportunity to drop in on those. They've had speakers from Google, from Tesla, et cetera, that are absolutely incredible at being able to adjust their speech to like a kindergarten through second grade audience. And, you know, these are high ranking, really accomplished people from Google, Tesla, et cetera. And the way that they have just adjusted their language, their content to be able to identify with these younger students has been so inspiring. So, big thanks to the people with iInnovate and our staff members and teachers, et cetera, Building, Grounds, and Transportation, the bus drivers that have done an incredible job at bringing some of these opportunities to our students. I'll stop there since I have kind of hogging the agenda tonight.
Thank you. That's great news. Thanks for sharing that with us. And next is our Measure D update. Brian.
Yeah, we have the termination of lease on the board agenda, the resolution, and quick claim deed tonight. So that'll close up that project. Beautiful new student services building, of course, enhanced safety measures at the school, right? Having this one stop for everyone to come onto campus, which will be great. Can't wait to show everybody the theater that's there. It's really, really turned out really nice. So I look forward to having kids and staff in the building. We also have two GMPs coming to the board in December, so we'll have the center section of the 100 building, which has been a critical component of our overall Measure D budgets, as well as a portion of the quad area that they look forward to getting started really soon. So those are the quick updates.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. Next, we have a resolution having to do with Measure D.
Yes. Yes. So we have the this is basically a resolution to end the lease. So this the construction delivery method for the student services building at San Luis Obispo High School was a lease-leaseback contract. So as part of that contract, we actually enter into a lease with the construction company, Acme. And so this tonight, since the project is completed, the resolution will basically end that lease. And then the next agenda item goes right into actually quit claim and basically taking the land back out of the lease. So we're asking the board to approve the resolution and then the actual quit claim and lease after.
So this is an action item? First I'll go to the public. Is there anyone from the public who would like to discuss this item, this resolution? Seeing no one, I'll come back to the board. Any discussion? Mark?
No, it's okay.
Oh, okay.
I'll move the resolution number 7-20-21.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Walt, a second by Mark. This is a resolution. I need a roll call vote. Chris?
Yes.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Catherine? Evelyn?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
And I am yes. All right. Thank you. Next, we have item 8.01, which has to do with the another Measure D item, termination of leases with Acme Construction.
Yeah, so this goes right along with the resolution. This is the actual termination agreement and quit claim deed that we need the board to approve.
Okay, thank you. First, I'll see if there's anyone from the public. There's no one. Then back to the board. Any discussion? If not, then a motion, please.
Is this a resolution, Mrs. Shuffer?
No, this is has to do with the termination of lease.
Okay, so you just need a straight motion.
Yes.
Approval.
Okay. Marilyn makes the motion, seconded by Catherine. Chris?
Yes.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Catherine?
Yes.
Evelyn?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
And I'm yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. Next is item 8.02, initial proposal of California School Employees Association for negotiations with the district.
Kristen, are you there?
Yes, we're working on it.
Okay.
Yeah, she is here. Hold on.
Okay. We'll get her here. Just one moment, please. We know she's been here, and we're finding her again.
Ryan, do you want to take this?
Marilyn, raise her hand.
Marilyn, did you have a question?
I can do it if you'd like.
Well, I just think it was, it's the Sun Shining Reopener proposal for SCSA.
Right. Right, yes, no, we're
was
just...
an attachment to our board packet, and I think it's available to the public, so I would go ahead and move it, if there's
well,
not a discussion.
Let's let it be just Kristen.
We
need it addressed a little bit. So, Kristen?
Sorry, my internet was not wanting to work there for a second.
We're ready for you.
So, this is the... So on the agenda tonight, you have two items that deal with the sunshining of CSEA. And so the first item is the proposal for us to start negotiating with CSEA. So it's presented to you for your approval.
I'd like to make a motion.
Okay, let me go to the public.
So, Dr. Prater, if I can tie in just a little bit to as part of the
recorded.
Go through the RFP. So, again, for the board to know, this went out in a proposal. We got a couple back. And most of the people and the companies that we talked to were more like telephone, you know, kind of call-in centers, basically. And so with the new laws that have come out, especially starting in January, there's a series of notifications that have to happen. Should somebody have COVID symptoms, test positive for COVID. So that's where, like Dr. Prater said, this is basically somebody who's going to coordinate the communication system. Okay. Coordinate the in terms of people knowing notification process. Currently right now, our personnel staff is doing that, but knowing that the board may choose for students and staff to be back on campus, that of course will expand dramatically. Right. If we have a lot more kids and staff. So, they were by far the best group in terms of their knowledge, their ability to help us and kind of plan this. And on top of that, they actually had an in-person, you know, individual that could be here on site, come around, you know, talk to staff, do whatever needed to have happen and make that connection with public health. So that's why they stood out. And that's why, we brought them forward tonight.
Thank you. Anyone else from the public?
There was one.
Right. I'm checking to see if there's anyone else from the public, Walt.
Then I'll come to the board.
No, I need to check. Just make sure. Okay, and no one else has raised a hand. So, Walt.
So I'm bothered by this agreement. Has it been looked over by our legal representatives?
It has.
Yeah.
Strikes me as a little one-sided, and I'm bothered, too, that we don't really, I mean, I'd like to know more about who this person is. I don't know anything about her background or her work, you know, history or anything. Just seems like a pretty big, complicated list of things to do for someone where we don't really know, I don't know much about.
Yeah, well, all I can say is she's part of our superintendent, county superintendent group, and she's been, you know, I've worked alongside her as a colleague for probably 3 years now. So she is very reputable, and
I'm not questioning her reputation or anything. I just, you know, it seems like a fairly, you know, a lot of interface. If there's a student who tests positive, then there's a lot of direct involvement with county public health and tracing, and so, you know, and this, you go circle back to what the one parent comment made about how we're not really doing a great job of selling some of this stuff to our parents. I reject the idea that we're selling things, but anyway, so I'd like to have a little more confidence in it, but I do appreciate your representations, and I always have. So, I mean, I'll take action on the agreement, but it just seems to me that it was kind of one-sided and short on detail about the individual, long on details with the task, but just because somebody has cut and dried tasks doesn't mean they're always capable of performing those tasks. But that's my comments, and I do appreciate your testimony.
Yeah, well, what I would say just in quick response to that is I understand we're in uncharted territory here. We're trying to anticipate if the board were to decide to reopen schools in January, then we're in November. And I'm trying to anticipate the need to, as all districts in California, anticipate the need to follow up and follow through when there is or when there are symptomatic students and staff. This one individual, I will say to you, I'm starting small, but I have a feeling that this particular individual will quickly become overwhelmed, whoever it is. I think the job is that big, but it's a good start for us to begin looking at how this is going to work. And I have enough trust in Resolute to know that they're super responsive, they're very professional, they're thorough. And everyone's sort of trying this on for size right now. This particular proposal in front of you is very likely the beginning. And many of it, as Mr. Pinkerton said, the laws are quickly changing to require communication with individuals and collective communities when there are COVID-identified positive symptoms and testing of individuals. And we have to notify many individuals that are in that person's sphere. So it becomes very detailed. And I just think without this individual, without us trying this on for size, it will be very difficult to recreate it down the road. So at least it gives us, I don't know, 2 months, 2.5 months to try to put together a working system and develop the relationship with that individual. And I think this is what I'm putting in front of you, is I do believe it's necessary.
Marilyn?
Yeah, I think that Resolute has proven to provide excellent service to the district in the past. But I agree, this is a fairly large contract. a not to exceed contract billed hourly, and I agree that this one individual, if we see another wave, may not be able to perform all the duties that are necessary, and that we may be needing to hire additional staff to do this work. So if the board, I think the board should be fully satisfied that the individual that Resolute's putting forward is fully qualified to do the work. And would it be possible between now and the next board meeting for you to inform the members of the board more about this individual and bring this contract?
session.
This meeting is being recorded.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, of course. Yeah, and just again to state, there appear to be some connectivity problems throughout town. I see Kim McGrath made a very rushed dash from her home to the district office in order to address the next topic, as though things aren't nerve-wracking enough for you. But it was pointed out earlier that we suddenly lost 50 attendees, and now they're back, and we lost some board members, and now we're all back. So as I said before, a lot of people very interested in being on every possible communication device, I think, this evening. There being no further discussion on this topic, we are ready to move on to 8.05, our in-person school reopening discussion number 2. And Kim, we're glad you're here. I know this must have been really nerve-wracking for you to go have your internet go down at home, and thankfully you were able to get here.
Yes, thank you. That's fun. Yeah, I apologize. I wasn't here for the previous one. I may have been able to address some concerns, but I will be happy to do that at our next meeting. So I do have the presentation tonight. Should I go ahead and share my own screen here?
There you go.
Okay. Let's see. There we go. Are you able to see my screen?
Yeah.
Great, thank you. So tonight we have our ongoing discussion around school opening, and obviously we are looking for a vote on this on November 17th. So we've been doing reopening and COVID updates all along, and so we'll have this as one of the final ones before the meeting on the 12th, and then hoping for a vote for reopening on the 17th. So I'll begin by going over what has taken place so far this fall. So school board, you obviously voted for distance learning through December. And so that's what we have been implementing. Although since September 8th, we've been phasing in some in-person opportunities. So on September 8th, we started with special education phase 1. So bringing back some special education students, kind of our more extreme circumstances, and bringing back those students for in-person opportunities. Then on October 1st, we've brought back hundreds and hundreds of students to our middle schools a little, but primarily our two comprehensive high schools, brought back athletics and extracurricular activities before school and two different after school options. And these are in stable cohorts. And so hundreds of kids have come back within that model. On October 15th, we had an additional phase 2 for special education students coming back. On October 26th, we did have our pre-K through 12th grade full plan approved by public health. So that is the extensive working guidelines, we call them. And the reason we call them working guidelines is because really there's no final document. We follow public health guidelines. We continually update that working guideline document. And so we did submit it for approval and had full approval of that plan. So that's a big step forward for us. On October 29th, the two comprehensive high schools started with some small groups of students back in person. And that is going well. I told you about the pre-K and TK. So darling, we have two different pre-K classes, and all of our transitional kindergarten classes were back on November 2nd, and welcomed those students back in the B2 model. And that's the model that they will hopefully keep all throughout the school year. On November 5th, Pacific Beach brought back some small groups of students and are going through the health guidelines as well. So looking forward to November, either 12th or 16th, special education will be bringing back phase 3. That will also include some first grade students at Del Mar because they have an inclusion model. So that will allow the SDC students there at Del Mar to come back in the first grade class as well. On November 12th, we're also starting a kinder pilot at three of our sites. That would be Del Mar, Sinsheimer, and Smith. So what we're doing there is just in this effort to have this ongoing rolled in, phased in opportunity, we need to kind of pilot some opportunities so that we may work through these health guidelines, kind of work through and let these sites that were willing to do that give information back to the other sites so that we can kind of all learn from them and they can help us to do this in the best, most smooth way that we're committed to doing this well. And then, of course, we have the last day here before break. I will continue to give you updates on our phased in as we continue to add to that. So let's talk about some of the key points within the working guidelines. So here in the bottom right corner, you'll see the link to the full working guidelines. And I'm just going to bring up some of the kind of key points of the health guidelines that you would find within that extensive document. So a couple things to think about. The surveillance testing. So Mr. Pinkerton's done a great job of working with local testing sites in order for us to conduct surveillance testing. So that is taking place for 25% of the staff on a rotating basis so that every 2 months, all staff that are working with students on a site are being going through this COVID surveillance testing. So that is going well. Like I said, 25% at a time. Those names are pulled randomly. And so far, we haven't had any positive cases come from the surveillance testing. Also, we have contact tracing. So part of our proposed contract with Resolute would be some systems that we need to put in place. So when we think about systems for how to keep up with symptom tracking, for how to keep up with leave policies, contact tracing, communication to sites if there is a positive case, training for staff members, et cetera, that it would be a big help to have that workplace infection prevention coordinator. So that is some of the tasks that we would look for help. So it's not that we haven't been doing that. I wanted to clarify that. It's just that current staff is holding that. And with the amount of students and staff that we have in person, that has been a lot to do, but manageable. But as we hopefully increase that in January, we are going to need some additional help in order to keep up with the systems that would be in place in order to keep up with that. So also the second thing, just to clarify that since our county is currently in the red tier, then we are obligated to follow the red tier guidelines. So I spoke to you previously about the small group guidelines. And so the red tier guidelines are different, and I'll go over some of kind of the major points there. Some of the points stay the same. For example, face coverings. So face coverings, you'll see in the working guidelines and in the information from Public Health Department that there at the younger ages, those face coverings are what they name as encouraged. For San Luis Coastal, what we're saying is that we would like to take that a step further and that we are expecting that every individual, students and staff members will have face coverings. There will be rare few exceptions with some extreme medical purposes. You may see a few students in special education that their health does not allow them, for example, to wear a mask, but this would be a small exception. The expectation would be every single adult, every single staff member, every single student would have a mask. So for all the parents, et cetera, you know, what we do in the parent forums and when we're sending information to those that are coming back in person is we say if you have the means, we encourage you to purchase a mask that your student is comfortable wearing at all times. If you're unable or, you know, if you would like us to, then we have purchased an incredible amount of PPE, including masks, even different sizes for the younger kids, some of the smaller ones, so that they can wear those all throughout the day. The only times they would be without a face covering would be if they're eating or drinking, And then there's some, if there's what they call extreme exertion in an athletic example. But otherwise, individuals would have face coverings on at all times. So that's an example of a red tier guideline that remains and is the same.
Yeah, everybody's calling Colorado already.
Jeremy, there's some that need to be muted. Thank you. So reducing exhaled droplets, what we're finding in the public health department is guiding us toward is that the science is really emphasizing the need to reduce exhaled droplets. So coughing, sneezing, one of the reasons why we feel strongly about everyone wearing a mask. So although we do, of course, still have janitors that will be responsible for cleaning surfaces and for extending and expanding the number of times and the amount of surfaces that are cleaned, the science and health department is really guiding us towards looking for ways to reduce the spread of the exhaled droplets. Another big concept is the utilization of outdoor spaces when we can. So looking for ways that students can spread out outside, could be spaced out outside, you know, having a reading group or whatever the different circumstances would be to be able to use outdoor spaces, that would be great. Hand washing and hand sanitizer, I have those together not to imply that they're equally as effective. Hand washing is, of course, the method that is within our working guidelines that we encourage people to, you know, continue doing thorough hand washing all throughout the day. But also hand sanitizer has been purchased extensively and is available at classrooms and locations throughout the school site to use on an ongoing basis as well.
Kim?
Yes.
I saw that Walt had a question before.
Oh,
did
thank you? I can't see that, but thank you.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a sense of how solidly the county is in the red tier, and with talk about surges, and you guys may not have the answers to this right now, but, I mean, are we... And we've gotten a number of emails where people will ask this question about, are we going to remain, if there's surges, are we going to remain in the red tier or are we going to be back in the purple tier and having to shut things down again? And I think it's a difficult and elusive thing to try to grab a hold of, but, you know, it's just disheartening to think that we could go through all this and then, you know, in February, have to pull the plug.
Yeah, so it's a great question, Mr. Millar. So, you know, there is a lot of concern. I think that, you know, through the winter months, as people are more indoor, as people possibly gather more during holidays, et cetera, that case numbers could increase. And there's two things to understand. One is that you're right. I think there is some concern about that increasing. And there's two ways to think about it. One is if it depends on when you have an entry point. If you enter within the red guidelines and the county guidelines say that if you're entered within the red guidelines and your county moves to purple, you're not required to shut down. Once you enter, once you begin, then case numbers per classroom, per school site, per district determine if you have to close. I guess the key would be if in January, if we're looking at an opening and we have moved to a purple tier, are we comfortable opening within a purple tier if we haven't already opened within red?
Thank you. And then, Kim, before...
thanks, Kim. That was helpful.
Yeah. And before you start back, I want to just ask, please, if anyone out there is using translation services, would you please indicate by raising the hand icon on Zoom? And there is not. Thank you so much, Kim.
Yeah, you bet. So the self-health check, so this is something that we will be communicating with all families and staff members, that a self-health check at home before you come on campus is going to be required. So what that means is, as we've talked about before, it's doing those questions to yourself. Do I have fever? Do I have, you know, a loss of taste or smell, et cetera. And making sure that as a student or a staff member, you're not coming on campus with any symptoms. What we're doing right now with our youngest students is we're trying out a QR code that families fill out. They demonstrate that they have gone through that self-health check. The administrator or someone on campus is making sure that that's completed before they come into the classroom. With the older students right now, for example, students in athletics, they can attest to the coach that they're reporting to that they're completely symptom-free, they did their health check, and they're feeling great. Right now, we're trying kind of those two different methods because it's a little trickier to get a 5-year-old to kind of self-attest versus a 17-year-old. So the self-health checks will be required of everyone and ensure that we make sure to go through that and kind of change the culture around coming to school with symptoms. We need to make sure we're not coming with any symptoms whatsoever. Right now we're conducting student and staff temperature checks, so that's with the touchless thermometers. We talked about the face coverings required for all individuals, staff, and students. Right now, our requirements have changed to not using water fountains, so we've been supplying reusable water bottles, or, of course, people can bring their own if they, you know, have one that they would like to bring. So the cleaning protocols, like I said, we are increasing the cleaning protocols. Mr. Pinkerton's working with Mr. Bonin and the BG&T staff to come up with a plan that provides for cleaning of classrooms and other spaces throughout our school sites at an enhanced level between switching of students, et cetera. As I've mentioned before, there's staff members since March that we've really publicized the ability to do extra cleaning. I know when I was a teacher myself, I still do it in my own office, that I just like to do extra cleaning. Of course, that's not required of those people, but it just allows the opportunity. If you are comfortable doing additional cleaning, then great. The next thing is a reduction of material sharing. Mr. Miller, I think, did I see your hand?
I'm just the question machine tonight.
You go for it.
So, Kim, does the water fountain thing also apply to the water fill stations? Is it more just to keep kids from congregating at things?
Yeah, the refill stations are acceptable. I think it's more about the mouth going near the water fountain. And yeah. I can picture my own child with his mouth wrapped around the water fountain, probably a little too much. So that reduction of exhaled droplets. So not using the water fountain where they would have their mouth, but filling their water bottles acceptable.
Good. Thank you.
You bet. And then the next one is reducing material sharing. So this does not say that we have to completely eliminate the sharing of materials, but you want to reduce that. So I know when the pre-K and TK teachers were really creative in their thinking of, you know, what can this look like? So I'll give you some examples. As some of the things they came up with is having little individual tubs for the kids where they had their own crayons or their own markers or their own pencils and things like that in their own individual tub. They had maybe their books for the week in their own individual tub. They would also do where they had only a reduced number of kids that were sharing the special math block or something, so that they would have only 3 kids sharing that. You know, they would try to check out math manipulatives that were individual to the student. So it's not the complete elimination, but it's just how can we be creative and think through that. I know right now, for example, in my example, pre-K and TK were creative in their solutions. And things like science lab, you know, they're going to need to be creative and start thinking about, does that mean there's a little more demonstration? Does that mean they have those materials individual? Do they have small groups only sharing those, et cetera? So it does take some creativity. So I know that we have great teachers that will think through what does that look like. So spacing 6 feet to the extent possible. So I know this term here, to the extent possible, you know, creates questions. So let me do the best I can to explain this. So spacing at 6 feet. So what that means is that when you look at things like students sitting at desk, if you measure a student nose to nose, things will be set up so that they are 6 feet apart. Now, that may mean that all the desks are there, but students are sitting at every other desk in order to provide enough spacing. If students are sitting on the floor, let's say on a rug for elementary, they are spaced out at 6 feet apart. The reason they put to the extent possible is because it's not just kind of humanly possible to operate hundreds of students within a facility and to make sure that every single second they are 6 feet apart. So there's going to be times when, you know, you're crossing someone's path in a hallway that where people may be, you know, going one direction and it, you know, might not be 6 feet the entire time. But when you look at how things are set up, when we're looking at occupancy within a classroom, you know, Mr. Pinkerton, Mr. Bonin are going around class to class to class and looking at how things are set up, et cetera. One of the things that I think people should keep in mind is that we're giving families the option of virtual learning for the year or possibly in-person learning for the year. And the number of families that choose virtual learning, let's say, if we go with this model, will reduce the number of in-person students at a time. So then that will help to create that 6 feet of spacing with the reduced class size number. In the B1 model, that's the model where all of the students that are wanting in person are there at one time, then you would have the reduction of the students that chose virtual. And it could be that the class size is still too large for that space. It cannot handle that occupancy. And so some of the things that were being considered is there another space on campus that could be utilized? Is there a library or a stage or another space? So that one is, you know, obviously a little more difficult with B1 because you have additional students there. So that is one of the benefits and one of the reasons why you have to go with more of a hybrid B2 model at larger class sizes or middle schools and comprehensive high schools. Just the sheer number, the facility itself doesn't allow for the spaces between students sitting down to be 6 feet apart. No visitors. This is something that we have continually communicated as people are coming back in person, that under normal circumstances, we would welcome people back, but we're asking that there be no visitors. So, for example, that would mean sites designating drop-off zones when someone drives up in the car, you know, letting the student out there. If they absolutely had to come in, let's say to pick up a sick student that became sick during the day, we would ask that only one adult in the family would come up there. And then the offices have been working on creating situations in the office, just like you've probably seen in other places where we've installed plexiglass, we have tables out front, there's signage of reminders, etc. I think I've emphasized this previously, but, you know, not attending at all for students and staff if you're experiencing any of the symptoms.
Kim, I think I may have seen. Evelyn, did you have a hand up? You're muted.
There I'm you sorry. I just wanted to get back to that 6 feet. So what you're saying is within the classrooms that there is that 6 feet that we're looking at, and you're I guess what I'm confused at, these are CDC guidelines, correct? And so if schools have opened in other areas, you know, and successful openings, are we looking to see how they are managing that 6 feet within the classroom? And then, as you said, that, I don't know, for lack of a better term, transition or that passing there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you bring up a great point, as we are talking, studying, you know, looking at how other schools, frankly, around the world, around our nation are doing it and, you know, who's doing it well and what does it look like. You're right that it's setting up the spaces when students are sitting down with 6 feet of distance. And then that is part of what we're trying to do with some of these pilots is say, what are those circumstances where we can learn and say, you know what, we didn't think about this. You know how it is when you go to do it, then you know, get even better at it. So kind of ironing out some of those circumstances so that we can learn and, you know, do it really well. So that is one of the benefits of having some of these pilots going on as well.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I know there was also a question about PPE. I think I did mention that any PPE needed is being supplied and has been ordered and is available you know, gloves, mask. We've even had some of the protective shirts type of thing that kind of wrap, go over. So those type of things have been ordered or available, and people are, you know, using them as needed. I want to talk to you next about engagement. So we've really been meeting with a wide variety of groups from a wide variety of stakeholders in order to gather input, to gather feedback, to think about pros and cons and take notes and questions, et cetera. So I know as everyone's almost, seems like society's starting to joke about the number of surveys, but we've been doing surveys with our parents, with our secondary students, with our employees, really asking, you know, where are you? What questions do you have? What are your concerns? How can we address those, et cetera? Dr. Prater held a few different employee engagement forums looking for kind of pros and cons of different things, fielding questions, answering, starting to give information. Parent advisory group as well. Dr. Prater leads this and has talked them through different plans, looked at the pros and cons. Many members of those groups send a wide variety of reports and research and data from schools all over that have opened or looking at their models, et cetera. We've also met with district parent groups. We have labor partners that Kristen Newland and I have met with. We have some of the groups that meet individually, and we have one where it's all three of our major labor groups, and we look through what are the pros and cons of this. Let's ask questions, gather feedback, input, et cetera. We have some excellent staff working groups. So we have groups, I'll give you a few examples, of like an elementary staff group that looks at just what would this look like for elementary? What does B1 or B2 or combination, et cetera, look like for, at an elementary level? We also have a middle school and high school group, and we, you know, look through, well, there's a clerical group that's done an amazing job of kind of refining their office protocols and creating consistencies. So there's a wide range of those type of groups of people that are coming together, putting their heads together, being creative, and thinking about how can we do this well. Student Senate is a good opportunity to hear from a real range of students from sixth grade through 12th grade to gather their input. We also have input from safety experts, from local public health, from Resolute Associates, from people that are in safety, health, et cetera, in order to give us input and to modify plans. Also, there's, you know, lots of science and research that I know a lot of us have been looking at. You know, how are people doing it well? What is science showing us? What do we need to focus on, et cetera? So let's look through some of the survey results here. I'll start here with the parent survey results. So this one here looks at the difference between the results we heard from elementary parents and secondary parents. So from the elementary parents, what I do here is I tend to look at the blue and the green sections here. So the blue section showed us that about 10% of the elementary parents said we would return or we would stay remote, but we really want to keep our same teacher. It's about 10%. About 40% said, let's come back right away. About 25% said, let's return to the
district.
So when you look at the combination there, if you combine this 10% that said, yes, I would return, this 40% that says, yes, let's return ASAP, and this 23% that says return in January, you have about 74% of elementary parents that are saying we're willing to return. Then you have about 15% saying we want to learn remotely all year long and 10% that's still unsure. For secondary parents, you can see that there's not the blue because, of course, they don't have the one teacher to stay with. But you're looking at about 38% that said let's come back right away, 30% that said let's come in January. So a combine of about 68% of our secondary parents saying let's come now or in January. With about 18% saying they'd like to learn remotely all year, some of those may include the students that are already in the VLP program and that chose at the beginning of the year to be in that. and 13% are still unsure. So that's the elementary and secondary parents. So let's look at staff survey. So I'm going to start down here at the bottom with classified staff. So if you look at classified staff, you're talking about 65% of classified staff saying, let's either return right now or in January. And then about 18% saying, let's learn remotely, and 15% not sure. Then next, if you look at elementary staff, you're looking at about 55% of elementary staff saying, let's either come back now or in January. And if you look at secondary staff, it is the smallest of the three. You're looking at 14% saying, let's return right away, 27%. So about 42%, 41% of secondary staff returning. So you're looking at 65 for classified, 55 for elementary, 41 or 2 for secondary. So then when you look at the elementary parents with the elementary staff, on this one you're looking at, if you combine kind of the return ASAP 40% and return in January 23%, then you have about 63 or 64% of parents from elementary saying, let's either return now or in January. If you look at elementary staff, you have about 55% that are in that responded the same. Let's either return right now or in January. Next, you have secondary. So the secondary parents, about 68% of them are saying, let's either return right now or in January. When you listen to the students' perspective, a similar percentage there, a little bit higher, maybe 69%. So 68 and 69% of parents and students. And with staff, you have about 14.5 saying ASAP, 27% saying in January. So a combination of about 41 or 42.
Kim, I see Chris Unger has his hand up.
Great, thanks.
Just quickly, Kim, one of the things I'm wondering about is we have this, it seems like a fairly large number of especially teachers who are still unsure. I'm curious where you think that comes from. It occurs to me that probably comes from them waiting to see what plans might be brought forward on November 17th. Is that your sense? And really looking for a sense that their safety issues will be addressed?
I think that's very fair. Mm-hmm. In the different work groups, I hear people asking real specific questions about health guidelines, just as we heard in some of the comments previously, concerns about, do we know how many students are learning remotely? How big will my class be? There's a little more concern at the secondary level because they see more groups of students, right? You have kind of an elementary model naturally creates a little more of a cohort of students. There's also some people unsure because they're wondering, will there be an increase of cases, right, as the winter months come. But I think your assessment is fair. Mm-hmm. So on the next slide here, we're looking at the schedule preferences. So when you look at secondary, the parents said they prefer the alternating day. The students said they prefer the alternating day, but to a lesser degree. And the staff preferred the full but alternating day. So that would mean that half of the students, for example, come on Monday. The other half of the students come on Tuesday. That first half of students come on Wednesday and just alternating like that back and forth. So as a student, I come Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and the next week I go Tuesday, Thursday, etc. I go every other day. The AM PM is the example of, as a student, I either go every morning or as a student, I go every afternoon. So this was...
Sorry, Kim.
Yes, please.
Mark?
Thanks. Kim, when we look at the preferences for what are we going to call it? One day on, one day off, alternating days. There was something, I don't know if it's in this or somewhere else, where it said, well, but we've already got approval for the half-day schedule from the county. So is the alternating days, has that gone to the county? Is anyone in the county doing alternate days?
That's a good question. The B2 model that we have in our previous MOU did spell out AMPM. Our B2 model that went to public health does say AMPM. There was some, talk about could we consider this every other day so that it's better for families is a lot of the pros that you hear, right, that it's hard to pick up in the middle of the day. I will say that the health guidelines are hard to follow when you have, half of the students there for the full day because of the breaks and especially because of lunch. It's just really hard. You think about a slow high case, for example, if you have 800 and something students there, working to space them out. Possible, maybe, but difficult in, having that many students there.
So when you talk about lunch, what I was reading in the comments is there's concern about lunch coming back with the B1, that there's concern about lunch because we sounds like we're going to have some kids in their classrooms, some kids eating in the cafeteria. So we're comfortable doing it one way, but not alternate days?
Well, I think you're right, Mark, that anytime you have half of the students that you're keeping there on campus, lunch is tricky. So even if they're outside, spaced out, would be the preference. Luckily, we have, great weather many days. Doesn't mean we can't every day. But if that's, our go-to is outside, but you do have to picture kids eating and drinking, having their mask off, right, keeping that spacing. You're right. When you have half of the students there during a lunchtime in any of the models, it's tricky.
Okay. And so I know Goleta went to an alternate day, and I haven't heard that they're changing it back. I'm hearing and I'm thinking there's a lot of pluses for the alternate day. So is staff looking at that now that we've got the numbers we have of students, parents, and staff preferring alternate day?
We have looked at what it could look like. It's just that those health guidelines for lunch – it just the management of that, I think, is one of the concerns that we hear.
Okay, so I'm. You help me again. In the B1 model that was presented, we would have all the kids back, and they would be eating lunch on campus.
Right. So
so administration has recommended that for the B1, but alternate days we would be concerned about the same situation where all the kids would be back on campus.
Mm-hmm. Anytime you have students there on campus, it creates, difficulty of managing that and maintaining spacing in any of the models, Mark, I would say, that have the students there during lunchtime. So the B1 model was one model that was put out there for elementary. Keep in mind that B1 does not work for middle schools and high schools, right, because you can't have the students, you have to have half of the students there for middle schools and high schools.
Right. So.
You're right. B1 as an elementary model and an every other day model, both of those models have students there during lunchtime.
Okay.
Correct.
And so there seems to be parents, students, and staff are looking at alternate as an option, there's a feeling that that might be an option. And then I pulled out of the, 166 plus whatever, the next group and the next group, those comments that we were given, it's a lot of people are looking at the alternate day and suggesting a series of pluses for them. And so pedagogically, is there something that would, why we're hesitant about discussing it much further? Especially at the high school?
So the question is pedagogically, is there a concern about it? Yeah, yep. So I think that concern is that if you miss one day, you are missing quite a bit, right? So if you miss Monday, and then that means you're not there Tuesday, you're missing a big chunk of instruction. The other hard thing is while a teacher has half of the students there, one day, half of the students there the next day, the students have to leave that class with enough instruction to be able to count for an instructional day while they're not with the teacher. And that part I think of is it like extensive homework that they're leaving with on day one in order to have enough work that they're completing while that student's home on the next day. So when you're looking pedagogically, I would say that's a bit of a concern.
Okay. So what I'm seeing in this is they're going to come back for half a day. So there's going to be X number of minutes in the classroom. And so then I guess what I'm hearing you say is the half days, so every half day is still a full day. So Monday, Tuesday, is the number of minutes would be roughly the same, right? If I'm on campus for half a day, I get X number of minutes. But if I'm in there for a full day, I get X number of minutes. And so it's just spread out. It's just spread out differently.
Right.
We can have further discussion on, you know, next Thursday. It's just that I guess I'm seeing that a lot of people are looking at it as an alternative. And so I've sort of looked into it and I'm just hesitant to keep looking at a model that's half day and not looking at a every other day model.
I understand. And I think you're right. We can keep talking about more specifics. We have a document now that looks at each one. And as we've gathered input from different groups, it looks at the pros and cons of each one. Okay. Unfortunately, every single model has its different pros and cons. You know, none of them are really perfect, but they each have their pros and cons in management and health, you know, public health issues.
Okay. Thanks, Kim.
You bet. So let me go through here on the parent and student. You know, there's a synopsis here down below of the comments, but here's some of just kind of the main pattern of comments that were found within the survey from parents and students. So as some of you mentioned earlier, you know, this possibility of an increase in cases during the winter and holidays coming up. You know, if there's adequate safety protocols, and will they be followed by students? So I think it's, and what happens when, if students don't, right? Mr. Unger.
Yeah, that's something I actually was thinking about. I did have a conversation with a teacher last Saturday, a high school teacher, and she explained to me that one of her students actually said, "Well, I don't think you can expect us to do this," which makes me very nervous. And so I'm wondering, I'm thinking, what are we going to do to help the students understand that this is a community responsibility? That if we want to have schools reopen, that they need to self-police, that we need to set up these expectations that they will police each other and that they will take care of each other. So what can we do in the high schools and middle schools particularly to set up those conditions where we're expecting that kind of community support and engagement to provide the best, provide the reminders and the things that will need to be done for the students themselves. So can you talk to me a little bit about that? Because I think that's going to be tremendously important. We can't expect the teachers to be the teachers and the classified staff and the administration to be everywhere all the time. It's going to be the students.
Well, I do appreciate that you address the culture of just, we wear masks, right? That's just what we do on this campus. And how do you create a culture like that is by ongoing communication, is by establishing this is the expectation, this is just what we're doing, and this is, you know, what's going to happen on this campus. Just like, you know, we put our shoes on before we enter campus, we put our mask on before we enter campus. I think you're onto something, Mr. Unger, that if we can create that with, you know, some of the great students we heard from is what can they do within ASB? What can they do on campus? What can they do, to build that culture? We can do our part of the communication, of the ongoing information about here's what we expect, here's what's going to happen, here's how you should act. And if not, then, you know, there's consequences and we'll be talking with you, et cetera. I think it's the follow-up, the follow-through, so that students and families know that we're serious about it and this is the consistent expectation.
Well, and then I think you addressed it a little bit before I, like I said, I was having the connectivity problems that a lot of people were having. But for students that would refuse to wear a mask that are not medically, that where it's not a medical necessity, does that become a disciplinary issue? Or do we just invite them to go into virtual learning? You know, somebody refusing to wear a mask who is asymptomatic or symptomatic is putting other people's lives at risk. How are we going to handle that?
Mm-hmm. I think you're exactly right that it's behavior management, just as we do with other, you know, acts of defiance, et cetera, right? Our teachers are great at starting with how can we have the conversation with the kiddo about, you know what, our expectation here is that you have a mask on. And then if, you know, if they're being, you know, a problem about it, then you're talking to them again, you're calling home, you're asking the administration for support, you're sending the student, you know, back. You're right. If it's an ongoing, you know, just pure act of defiance, then it's the conversation about, you know, in person doesn't seem to be working for you. So that is the expectation and people should understand that even as if you're making the decision, if you're still in that unsure category or if that's, you know, something that's part of your decision, you should know that that is the expectation that adults and students will wear masks.
I see Evelyn's hand.
Thank you, Ms. Schiffer. I guess along with what Chris is saying, I've looked at you know some of the districts. Are we at all considering some kind of agreement that students would sign that this is you know we come you know sort of like I'm thinking in terms of the responsible use of technology. That students have to sign, and there's that, you know, and you know, even before that, students come on campus when the, and you know, with parents, is there's that on record that this is what you are agreeing. You come to campus, you that's what it means. Being on campus, it means wearing a mask.
Mm-hmm. Yep, like a student agreement. It's a good idea. So if I continue here, the survey also the comments were about, you know, the kind of looking for an in-person being, you know, this optimal learning environment and how do we create that? Obviously, the connection, community, the emotional well-being, you know, was a continual topic. Really, the schedule, kind of the logistics, childcare, of course, the number of kids in classrooms needing to be reduced. That concern for at-risk family members, and then students that are falling behind and grade suffering being a concern.
Chris, and then Mark.
I just think we may have done this before, but I think this is talking about connection, community, and emotional well-being. I just want to acknowledge the students that wrote us and that sent us videos explaining their situations and why they felt that coming back to school was so important to them. And so, I just want to acknowledge and thank them for that.
Mark?
Yeah, Kim, if you could go back up to the falling behind in the grades on the screen. Thanks. So I got some communication. I also reached out to some families, and I sit on the equity committee. So what was interesting among the comments from parents was we have formed a pod. I have hired a tutor. I'm looking at going to a private school. And I'm looking at this through an equity lens, and I'm thinking that this is a good opportunity for us to sort of walk the talk. And I'm not sure that within our plans we've looked at that. So I guess what I'm asking is, maybe we can address it. Maybe it has been addressed. One of the concepts was, you know, people that can afford it or have the wherewithal or have the organizational skills have created pods. and they have an adult with those pods. Could we do some of that organizational work through the district to create pods? Could we put paras? Could we put subs as the leaders of those pods? Another thing that I learned today is the Tascadero is going to be providing, if somebody wants it, providing flu shots for the children. I haven't seen that in our plan. I think it's an interesting concept. There was a question among the parent comments about supplying masks, and I think the teachers as well. Are we going to be supplying masks for the students, especially those that maybe just don't have the wherewithal to do it? And then my favorite thing about alternate days versus morning, afternoon, a lot of the comments were that would be a more equitable situation. So I just wonder if we've taken an opportunity to use our equity lens as we look at these plans and what we're going to be providing. And falling behind grades and suffering is something that I also think may be an equity issue.
Mm-hmm. So if I can address a few of those things.
Yeah, sorry about that. That was a lot. I'm not sure I can say that many words again.
So first of all, kind of the pods, as we bring back these groups and in-person offerings, that's what we're looking to do is how do we bring back students that are really needing it. So that focus on our special education students, the small groups that are coming back, or students that are really demonstrating that they are struggling and need it. And so I think that is our way, of continuing to look for small groups and this phased-in, in-person approach for students and, that are struggling and that really need it. The flu shots we do have offered, and there's a schedule out that's available for families and students. So, yeah, that part is out. And then mask, yes, they've been purchased, and we encourage people to, bring one if they have the means that they're really comfortable with, that they know they can keep on all day long. But if they forget one or something, they have been purchased and they're available.
Okay. And so one of the concepts that was raised was, would it be possible to maybe survey really specifically looking for people that maybe not have the means to not work. A parent at home is really struggling, is really causing a struggle among the families. And as we bring back special ed for reasons and younger kids for reasons, that we could also bring back kids that are in the most need, their families are, and those kids are in the most need of being in an in-class situation. So I just want to share that. It was a very interesting thought.
Thank you. When we look at our...
Carolyn has a question, Kim. Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Mrs. McGrath, I have a concern, and in particular through the equity lens of equity. It's not on this list because I think we got the information after we had surveyed. But the kind of gut punch that we took with regard to busing, and that we only found out about less than a week ago, I think. If we're not able to bus regular education students, if we only, because of health department rules, are able to bus our special education students and homeless and foster youth, then that creates for me a real equity issue with our low-income students who are, I think, taking advantage of the bus as an opportunity to get to school, and that under any of these scenarios, if we can't bus... I fear that a lot of students will not be able to get to school.
I have a concern about transportation as well. So there is a little bit of discussion happening, but you're right. The health guidelines right now say that spacing needs to be utilized. Of course, it has to the extent possible. So there is some discussion, and I'm hearing in the background about that recommendation from public health has not been a public health order. It's just been a recommendation. And so therefore I am hearing some discussions in the background about if that really gets in the way of us being able to operate, which is for us providing an education for students. That, you know, I do hear that being kind of argued in the background. For right now, you know, we are kind of operating from the place of that they're saying that we need to provide spacing, which obviously really limits the capacity that we can have on our buses. I have a concern with that as well.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
Yeah, you know, I want to piggyback on Marilyn's thoughts. I agree 100%. And I'm going to go ride my horse again. I apologize, but if we were in alternate days, it would be half the amount of transportation for families. Thanks.
So if I look here,
Evelyn, I'm sorry, Kim.
I'm sorry.
What's going on, Evelyn?
Yeah. Hi. I'm just wondering if and this is coming from our local public health department, Kim, regarding the busing kind of spacing. Is that correct?
Correct. They typically follow the CDC guidelines and then, you know, look at how they, you know, sometimes interpret it, and then they give it to us, and then that's what we're required to follow.
So how are other districts who are opening locally dealing with this?
Yeah, I don't see a lot of transportation happening at the other school districts.
But... okay, I guess my question is, for some of those districts, they have a higher percentage of, you know, needier students, so they're just not busing, but they're opening.
That's what I'm hearing. Correct, is that they're, you know, trying to follow the same similar guidelines, and so they have really limited busing opportunities.
And I see Chris has a question.
Well, I one other thing, just a reminder that Templeton has pretty much eliminated all home-to-school transportation. I believe Paso Robles, because of their financial crisis, has eliminated most home-to-school transportation. So these districts are already, I think, providing transportation at a level that will be difficult for some.
Okay, should I move on here?
Yeah.
Great.
Yes, please.
Okay, great. So we have here some, you know, kind of the key staff concerns. So you can see the extensive comments there, but some you'll see overlapping that winter holiday kind of increase in cases, if there's adequate safety protocols, the training, the enforcement of those. So that's one of the things we were talking about, like when a student doesn't wear a mask or if they're, you know, being defiant about it. How is that being enforced, et cetera? I will tell you in the leadership documents, we have created behavior guidelines, and we outlined those previously. So that would be a good time to train, to reinforce, to talk people through that. You know, kind of the adequate time for planning in-person learning. A number of kids in the classroom needs to be reduced. I know we heard that earlier, as well as kind of that schedule, the logistics, and childcare concerns, how to conduct small group collaborations. So as you know well, we have worked incredibly hard, and our staff has worked incredibly hard to really emphasize small group. So in some ways, the instructional practices are not always our favorites in some of these situations. But, you know, can we still look for ways for students to, you know, maybe have a plexiglass barrier between picture elementary small group reading or those sorts of creative solutions so that small groups can still occur. A concern, of course, for at-risk family members, and then, you know, in-person being a real optimal learning environment, but still concerns about the safety restrictions. In the parent advisory group, the report summary there is that, you know, that really is kind of thinking of the end. COVID-19 will be with our community for a long time, and remote learning isn't really sustainable for the duration of its presence in our community. that the group feels confident in reopening elementary schools in January with the appropriate safety measures in place, and is asking that we really target funds to PPE, which we have done, not as much as, you know, based on sanitizing, because that needs to be based on current transmission data, which we talked about, the exhaled droplets. The group doesn't feel as confident in reopening secondary schools, an AABB schedule, kind of with Wednesday as the cleaning and kind of prep day in the middle, was the suggestion of being better for reducing exposure, to also look at a prioritization of hands-on classes like CTE classes, electives, et cetera, maybe science labs for in-person, and look at could we conduct other classes virtually. And then that acknowledgement that some kids are suffering and, you know, have underlying learning disorders, et cetera. So consider implementing kind of these social interactions. Are there ways to continue ways for kids to connect even if we are in distance learning? So next, just to acknowledge that there is a, you know, a wide variety of input, a wide variety of people that are weighing in, gathering their information, et cetera.
Excuse me.
Oh, thanks. Yes.
So, Kim, in the previous slide where they're talking about contact tracing, do we have a test, and I don't mean the employee rotating testing, surveillance testing. I mean, do we have a test that we could give a symptomatic child or, you know, staff member and get results quickly enough that we can kind of contain and isolate sufficiently where we won't have to close down an entire site?
If a test is needed, they have to go off campus to have that test, like if they were feeling symptomatic in the moment. So let me kind of clarify a few different things. So one is kind of the contact tracing. So what we're asked to do is if anyone is within 6 feet for more than 15 minutes, then we have to report who those people are. If they've been exposed to a positive COVID result, then they're asked to go and have that test. And then we get the results from public health if it's a positive test.
Thank you. I don't see it where it really accomplishes what we need to do, but thank you.
So if a child appears to have to be symptomatic are we going to be in a position to, I think we'll talk about this, and this will be part of what we see on November 17th, but isolating these students, removing them from campus, and then basically saying you can't come back on campus until you either resolve the symptoms that you're demonstrating right now, which could be a cold or the flu or something like that, or you get a negative COVID test and then you're quarantined for 14 days. And kind of, I think one of the questions, Mr. Millar, that I'm reading is the rapid tests are not very reliable. At least that's what I'm reading right now. Lots of false positive, lots of false negatives. So I think nationwide, we're not at a place where we can depend on the rapid testing yet, unfortunately.
Thank okay you. To go on there, Ellen. I don't see everyone, so
Mrs. McGrath.
Yes,
I think it's really important to walk Mr. Millar's point and to Mr. Unger's point that we do and we have identified exactly when in our safety guidelines that when a child or a staff member exhibits symptoms that they're Those based on those symptoms, there's a protocol that's followed, and they're directed to leave. They're not allowed to be on campus, and it's at that point that the contact tracer, while that child or staff member is at home, follows a specific protocol of directing that child or the parent of that child to go get testing or stay at home until those symptoms have passed. It's laid out. You reviewed this during last board meeting in your presentation. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I do think you outlined it well. What I thought Mr. Millar was asking is then, do we have a rapid test on campus to give to the student? And that's not the protocol.
Well, it wasn't even a rapid test, even though I do think that would be a pretty good idea. It should be developed one. But it's more than that. You know, okay, a symptomatic child is... Parents called, parents come back, our contact tracing person says, you need to go to, you know, my son had a breathing incident at work, which caused him enough concern, and he was tested. It took 4 days to get his potentially negative result. So I guess that's my concern. So then how many days later do we find out, yes, this child was, positive, and it's just, anyway, that's my concern. I am baffled by the lack of reading and trying to understand, but I don't know how we do this without some more reliable, quick-acting test, and that's where I'm hung up on it.
Yeah, and I do think we're getting results, Mr. Pinkerton, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we're getting results from all of our surveillance testing within a day or two. So, luckily not.
But that's different. Surveillance testing is different.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that we're getting good results. In fact, maybe we ought to figure out how to expand whoever it is that can get us those test results to other areas.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see Chris.
As we're talking, one thing that it just occurred to me is, will there be religious exemptions, and can you talk to me about what something like that might look like?
If there's an exemption for taking the test. So,
I grew up in a family where faith healing was the norm. And so, if a parent, I guess my question is, what if a parent says, my religion prevents me from having thus and so?
Right.
What would our next steps be with something like that? I'm sorry, what?
It's a good question, because if the refusal is for any purpose, then they're handled as if they're positive. So you'll notice in the chart previously that it said for a positive case or a denial of test, then the health department handles them as if they are a positive case. So then they're in isolation for 14 days, and they have to follow that same procedure as if they were positive.
And then Mark had a question.
No, I think Kim answered it. I think in the vaccinations within that new code, there's no more religious exemptions. You have to get tested if you can be tested. So I think it's that same model, and that's what I'm hearing Kim say.
We've had some refusals, and so I saw the health department handle them as if they were positive.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Right. I think we're good, Kim.
Okay, great. So just again, we've talked about a few of these, but just parent community groups, gathering input from the parent leader group, from DLAC, looking at these regularly held meetings and how we can gather input there. From community groups, district equity team, or Common Ground Task Force, kind of looking at how can we continue to bring this up. And I know it's been mentioned some today. With our labor partners, we get really great feedback and information. So we've been looking over plans V1, V2, looking at pros and cons, how that can be strengthened. Looking at obstacles, looking at logistics of each plan, and we will continue to meet with those groups to work through that. In addition, we have these staff working groups. So I mentioned some of these previously, but we include a wide variety of stakeholders, and I mentioned the elementary, the middle school, high school work group, a clerical work group, and then really job-specific ones, also getting feedback from our elementary and secondary principals. You can see the summary here when Student Senate kind of gave their information that they really want to return to school, but of course they don't want to contribute to the spread. Middle school students said that they're feeling isolated and disconnected, and they want a way to make friends. prior to returning to school, and that students want to work on feeling connected to and communicating with their teachers. High school students said something kind of similar. They're missing that feeling of connection, experiencing kind of decreased mental health. And students are, of course, concerned about the safety risk of reopening, including other students following safety protocols, like as we were talking about earlier. And specifically, Pacific Beach students are feeling isolated and having some tech difficulties. So the input we've had from safety experts within local public health, other safety groups, we have this frequent ongoing collaboration with the SLO Public Health Department. We have had plans approved by the health department, and we have this frequent ongoing collaboration. Mark.
So when we talk about the pre-approval of the plans or the approval of the plans, B2, I believe when it's come to the board, there's always been it's half day or could be whole day, alternate days. So when we talk about the plans being approved, were alternate days part of that approval?
I'm going to have to double check. I think it's only AM, PM right now in the B2, but we can add to that and ask for their approval.
And
Mrs.
McGrath and Mr. Buckman, I was on a conference call with County Public Health, Dr. Rosen, and we asked him if the alternate day model under B2 would be acceptable, and he told us that it is, but it's not preferable. For the reasons that Ms. McGrath stated earlier about sort of that same group of kids throughout a whole day. But he did say that it would be acceptable.
Thanks, Eric.
So next, we have been looking at a wide variety of science, research, other districts, schools, what research is telling us about the virus, what it's telling us about students, schools. I know the board members do an amazing job of reading and sharing as well. So here you will find a link to some of the articles and some of the reports. And I'll finish up with just a few things about learning. There's a good quote here. Findings suggest that the students who most benefit from daily systematic instruction when schools are open are the ones most likely to demonstrate learning loss when regular lessons are not available. So when we look at a couple pieces of data here, we look here, so I want to be clear about this data. So this is 1920 data here when you're looking at trimester 2 kindergartners. So that would have been from a BAS learning percentage here. So 67% of trimester 2 kindergartners meeting the grade level expectations in reading. And then this is, one comparison. It's not completely apples to apples, and I'll explain that here in a second. But at the beginning of the year 2021, when we looked at using the FastBridge method for checking grade level expectations in reading, only 47% of the students were meeting the grade level expectation. And of course, we have concern about some of the key learning skills happening for our early learners. So when it comes to the end of trimester 1, we'll be able to do that straight comparative data. So that'll be here in 2 or 3 weeks, and we'll be able to look at what the percentage was from trimester 1 last year compared to trimester 1 this year. And just the last piece of data here to look at is when we looked at progress reports and where grades are sitting for middle school and high school students. If you look at the 1920 results for the first progress result, for DNF rates, you can see that it ranged kind of between 19-29%. And in 2021, when we're looking at our middle school and high school D's and F's, it's ranging from 35-37%. So there is an increase in DNF from that first progress report at our two comprehensive middle schools, two comprehensive high schools, and that change is an increase somewhere between 6 and 15%. Yes, Mr. Unger.
I know that I shared this with you, Kim, an article in the Los Angeles Times earlier this week talked about the increasing number of D's and F's among students. Now, I think at least 80% of the students in LA Unified are free and reduced, are, you know, lower SES students, socioeconomic status students. And I have concerns that about which students are getting D's and F's. Are we seeing our students who are students in poverty, our students at need, being more at risk of getting D's and F's than students who aren't? And I think that's something that we need to consider again, Mark, Marilyn, everybody else, as we look through the lens of equity.
And I know we've been asking questions and feedback along the way, but of course, if you have any more, I'm happy to respond.
I'm going to ask a question. Catherine, do you want to try speaking and see if we can hear you?
Yes, maybe this will work.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you very much.
You may ask your question.
Kimberly, I was wondering if you have, or we've given any thought to how we might engage Cal Poly students, particularly students who may be in education, to work with our students sort of more individually or as tutors, that it would both give the students perhaps a sort of a way of catching up or keeping up academically, but also another set of eyes on our students to just check in with them about any anxiety they might be feeling or upset about the world in general. Just was curious about whether we have any thoughts about going that direction.
Yeah, I haven't heard anyone exploring that idea, but it is an interesting perspective.
Great, thank you. I might be able to make some introductions for you in that regard so we can talk about that later. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Kim, for your presentation. At this time, we have received several written comments, and I know we have people from the public who would like to speak. I am going to say that if you spoke previously on the issue of reopening, or I read a comment, or you spoke in person, you are precluded from speaking at this time on the same topic. So please be aware of that. If you sent a letter or a written comment, you don't get to speak as well. If you spoke before, you don't get to send a written comment as well. Everyone gets one chance at this. But we have several people who have sent in written comments before, and then I know we have some folks here who would like to speak. Before I get started, though, I'm going to check once again for the ease of our translator, just see if anyone is here still using the translation service.
Levante la mano, por favor.
Please raise your hand.
Por favor, levanten la mano si necesitan el servicio de un intérprete.
No, okay, there is no one at this time.
Muy bien, no hay nadie de momento, así que me voy a retirar.
Thank you. Maria needs a break. I'm working. She's been interpreting this entire meeting, so she will take a break. All right, I'm going to read, start with written comments, and then we'll move on to people who are here. Starting with Matthew Moore. I am writing to you today regarding the parent reopening survey that SLCUSD recently conducted. I am the parent of a fifth grader and a seventh grader in the district, and I teach political science at Cal Poly. First, I want to express my appreciation of the board and SLCUSD staff for how carefully you have made decisions, how inclusive the process has been, and how effectively you have supported families during the coronavirus pandemic. I have friends in other local districts whose experiences have made it clear that not all local districts have approached things this way, so thank you. Along those lines, I respect and appreciate the decision to survey parents about our preferences regarding the remainder of the school year. I answered this survey expressing my concerns. As I later learned, my wife also answered the survey expressing her own concerns. It is the fact that we accidentally both responded to the survey that prompts my letter. If you wanted to know how individual parents feel, then our results may have been helpful, though that raises questions about step-parents and other guardians having an outsized impact. If you wanted to find out how households with students feel, then we accidentally had double the intended impact. My concern is that the results are not valid if there wasn't some control over the data submission process. Just as a contrast, when Cal Poly surveys its students, the university uses unique tokens in the invitations to ensure that each student answers only once. There are a number of techniques that can ensure the confidentiality of responses while also ensuring that no one responds twice. While I think it's probably unlikely that there were widespread efforts by individuals to submit multiple surveys, given the understandably strong feelings about this issue and the large number of respondents, it seems likely that there were at least a few intentional duplicates. But given the lack of clarity about who was supposed to answer and the lack of data security on who actually answered, I think that the results are probably invalid and not useful. If the district is committed to this being a participatory process, I recommend doing a new survey with the controls mentioned above. There are a number of survey and data science experts at Cal Poly. This is not my area of specialty, so I am not one of them, who I imagine would be willing to help, probably quite a few, as volunteers. I would be happy to help you find someone to work with if that's what you would like. Thank you for considering my feedback. Steve Del Martini. The following are concerns I would like addressed by the school board in regards to the reopening of San Luis Obispo High School. One, I believe you are following the CDC guidelines. 25% of the teachers will be tested each week, which leaves a gap in between testing that will allow a teacher to contract COVID without knowledge of this and potentially spreading it to others, including family. There is no requirement for student testing. Please consider more testing for the teachers and include students. I understand there may be health screening by thermometer. However, I think it is unacceptable to depend on a thermometer. There needs to be more clarity on student screening. Is there a positive test number for teachers and or students that reverses the decision to reopen? Two, there are older classrooms that lack appropriate ventilation. Substituting fans to just push air around the room is unacceptable. Expecting teachers to try to talk over fans and keep students engaged will be a problem. Three, it's my understanding that the rooms may be set up for classes that will have every other desk open. Each class, the students will use the desk that was not used in the class before them. The discussion is to have janitors come in the classroom while the class is in session and clean the desks. Do you really think having janitors cleaning desks at the same time classroom instruction is going on will work? Four, by your own survey included in this staff report, basically half the teachers are willing to start teaching in the classroom. Is there a plan for a teacher to opt out of in-person and continue with distance learning other than a note from a doctor? I will be 66 years old in February. My wife cares for her 89-year-old mother. I am very concerned about my wife having to go back to in-person learning and bringing home COVID. Five, I'm not clear how mask management takes place. What if a student will not wear a mask for any reason? Will they be sent home? If a student does not have a mask, will the district be providing masks? How do you enforce wearing a mask in between classes and maintaining a proper social distancing? By the time you are planning to reopen, the students will have completed half of the school year. My suggestion is to get through this school year and hope there is a return to normalcy next year. Keep all options open. Please don't force teachers during this pandemic into an environment that may cause a very serious and harmful outcome. Thank you for considering my comments. Dr. Jason and Katie Green, we would like to reiterate our support for the in-person learning plan. We think it is extremely important to get the students back into the classroom. Many schools nearby and in other parts of the state and country have safely brought back students and staff for in-person instruction. We encourage the district to move forward with the in-person reopening plan. We appreciate all your hard work. Thank you for your time and effort. Sean McNabb, have you considered just renting as many tents and trailers you can get your hands on to provide the needed space to effectively provide physical distancing? There seems to be enough space on many of the campuses to pull this off, and I am sure you can leverage some nearby parks and entertainment venues. While the cost may be high, it is also justified during this crisis. Spend the money we need to spend. I am sure there will be funding available when all this is over to backfill any loss we see during this crisis. Thanks. Christine Crozier, thank you for all your hard work in this surreal time. As a parent of both a middle and high school student, I am seriously concerned about their return to school. Obviously, we all want things to return to normal, but we can't. Looking at the proposed schedule, I think half days is unrealistic with proper cleaning of schools, the amount of students on campus in any given day, transportation issues for families. It seems as though a Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, Friday schedule would be safest, giving all Wednesday for thorough cleaning. This would also allow contact tracing to be done as only half the students would be in this cohort. If an outbreak exists with students, only half would have been exposed as compared to the whole campus. I am also concerned about committing to either virtual or in-person classes in November when cases are currently rising and will likely continue, especially during the holidays. While I want my children back, I don't know that this is realistic this year, and we, our students and staff, may be better off continuing distance learning through the end of the year. Beth Langlais, the district had put forth a comprehensive, thorough, and safe plan to successfully reintroduce students to the classroom. Parents who are uncomfortable returning under the current proposed plan have the option to remain in distance learning. Currently, the district is not meeting the needs of all students in our community by prohibiting a return to in-person instruction for so many children who need it. My children are not learning. It is unbearable to watch them struggle to pay attention to a computer screen day after day with little to no increase in knowledge. I have watched their love of learning disintegrate before my eyes. They are 6 years old. It is heartbreaking. The benefits of in-person learning for thousands of students in our district far outweigh any little remaining risk under the proposed safety plan. Additionally, all of the current data shows schools are not drivers of community spread infection. Europe has prioritized their children in keeping their schools open despite increases in virus cases. Our kids deserve the same. For many children, distance learning is not appropriate or adequate education. Children who need in-person instruction to learn effectively should be in the classroom. We are doing them a disservice and setting them up for a lifetime burden of educational challenges and mental health issues by forcing them to remain home. Give our kids a chance to be successful in learning and in life by bringing them safely back into the classroom as quickly as possible. Richard Tao, thank you for allowing a public discussion and giving parents a collaborative forum to address the board, fellow parents, our own neighbors, and friends. It is important to acknowledge that there are many hypothetical concerns that are being raised. I, however, respectfully believe that these concerns are being clouded by nuance, like the precise measurement for physical distancing, toilet seats, and the aerodynamics of an in vitro viral particle floating in the air of an expired breath. Why are some focusing on minutiae when we can encourage a KISS, keep it simple, student approach? Wear a face covering, wash hands, and physically distance when possible. I believe these hypotheses are distorting reality when there is at least some clear data coming from school districts that have reopened for over 1 month. These metrics can be found on various school district COVID-19 dashboards. Consider the Irvine School District, for example, whose district has a reported staff and student population of 24,958, over three times the student population of SLC-USD alone. As of October 30, they are reporting a case number of 5 individuals since reopening September 24. This is a case percentage of 0.020%, or one case in 5,000 individuals. Let's look to our neighboring school districts at how they have successfully reopened and kept their students and staff in a safe, thriving, and mentally enriching environment. Let's also continue following reopening guidelines and recommendations set forth by the American Academy of Pediatrics, CDC, and the California Department of Health, instead of hypothetical models that only confuse and confound real-world situations. I certainly hope parents and schools can work together to create and support practical solutions to problems instead of creating more problems to solutions. Thank you for your time. Christy Shire, the kids need to be in school. I mean, if private schools can figure it out, so can you. Brooke Blackham, please let my children go back to school. I'm a stay-at-home mom of 5, and I see all of their suffering, depression, anxiety, rage, obesity, and suicidal thoughts. Please hear this. I would like to say all my children are healthy, but this is so unfair to them. Their mental health is suffering. My mental health is suffering. My high school daughter has been a straight-A student since middle school. Her highest grade now is a B- and 4 Fs. We've never seen her get an F. This is devastating to her. She works so hard. Aaron Roberts. As a community member and employee of San Luis Coastal Unified School District, I would like to submit a comment regarding reopening of our schools. I have been back to work in person on several campuses, working with students K through 12 for the last 2 months. The San Luis Coastal Administration team has done an amazing job of setting up protocols and making the environment safe to work in. Not once have I felt unsafe. It is time for the rest of the students and my colleagues to return to in-person learning. An overabundance of caution is being taken to make it safe for our students and employees. England, France, and many other countries in Europe are tightening restrictions on bars and social gatherings, but they are keeping their schools open. They have declared schools are essential. Our students and families are essential, and they have suffered enough. The risks associated with keeping students at home far outweigh the risks associated with bringing them back in person. I challenge the board to continue thinking outside the box, outdoor classrooms, etc., on how to get students back in person. Private schools in the county are open and running extremely successful programs. It can be done, and we must do it. Thank you. Bryce Prunty, the state of California has deemed our schools safe to open. All the school districts around ours have opened. Almost all of the data has shown that school can open safely. What are we waiting for to open our schools? Governor Newsom put his kids back in school. According to a political article on October 30th, Newsom reiterated his belief that schools need to open as soon as possible, citing academic and social-emotional concerns. I am still unclear on what we are waiting for to open our schools. I think teachers should have the right to decide not to go back to work, but I do not think they have the right to stop my kids to go back to school. If some teachers do not want to go back, they can teach the kids whose parents do not want their kids to go back to the classroom. I appreciate your time. I hope you will allow my kids to go back to school in January. Heather Ortiz, if we really are going to go back in January, I would like consideration that the elementary start date to be moved back a few weeks so that we can get past the prime holiday travel plus 3 weeks. We can ask families to use those 3 weeks as a self-quarantine time if they did gather or travel over the holidays. Then we can go back at the end of January, like the junior high and high schools, thus clearing the most dangerous post-holiday travel return transmission window. I understand the need to get back for so many reasons, but why rush to get back less than a week after students return from family gatherings and travel? Because we all know that there will be plenty of that, when waiting 2 or 3 more weeks will likely cause little additional disruption, but potentially much harm. Thank you for considering. Alessandra Matos. Our COVID infections numbers seem to be controlled. I think that a lot of parents who were feeling unsafe opening school a couple of months ago are now a little more at ease. That's definitely my case. My son, a second grader at Pacheco, is doing fine. He does not love his Zoom classes, but he has adjusted. My daughter in kinder, not so much. She needs to be at school to learn to read and write, learn math, and a new language. However, to feel safe, masks need to be mandatory and required, exempting ADA compliance, health issues, obviously. I hope you would change the wording on masks being recommended or expected and make it clear how important mask wearing is to open our schools and to keep them open. Joshua Evanoff. I have an in-home daycare and I have four kids in distance learning. I also have a son with ADHD. It is impossible to keep on top of all of their schoolwork and to keep them on task. I feel that with distance learning is ineffective. I feel that my children are falling behind. I want my kids to be back in the classroom ASAP. They need the in-person instruction, not the distraction of being at home. It is difficult, if not impossible, to be a working parent and be able to keep on top of your students to make sure they are paying attention and doing their work. My kids have never had problems with their grades until now with the distance learning. This is from Courtney, and you really need to put your last names on these. I'm going to read them tonight, but in the future, your full name needs to be included, please. I'm writing in support of elementary schools reopening after winter break in January. My child is in kindergarten, and I was disappointed to hear that he will not be going back this month, but understand that there are many factors that go into reopening that I am unaware of. However, I hope that these issues have been solved and we can continue on the timeline that has been discussed for a January reopening. Thank you. Amy. I'm the parent of a first grader at Bishop's Peak. We're extremely grateful for all the hard work the teachers, staff, and administration have put into our distance learning. I feel like my daughter has done as well as can be expected under the circumstances. That being said, my daughter is struggling with not being in school with her teacher. She thrives in that setting, and she is facing some challenges this year that can only be evaluated in a classroom setting, not by video. As an RN, I understand the absolute necessity it was to close the schools. However, my daughter needs to be back in school. We are very hopeful that this will happen in January. My daughter attended the Slow Parks and Rec summer camp, and we feel confident that she can attend school safely. Please continue to work toward the goal of reopening. Thank you. Shauna Devlet. I think it is impossible to recreate the stimulation of learning in person. I am worried about the social, emotional, and developmental short-term and long-term effects distance learning will have on our children. The learning loss from COVID slide is already evident. The longer we wait to at least try to reopen in a hybrid setting, the worse it will get. I think as a community, we can work together to reopen hybrid safely. Thank you. Samantha Chancellor. As a parent with children in elementary, K and second, as well as child care provider, I am both excited and nervous about the board's decision to reopen schools. I have seen and read a lot about keeping cohorts small and contained, yet I have seen very little about how this relates to child care both before and after the in-person sessions. How will children be kept from mixing with other cohorts of children in a child care facility? Will there be communication between the schools and child care centers providing care for children from those schools in regards to positive cases or exposure? I understand that this is a difficult decision for all to make, but the three-hour kindergarten schedule makes it very difficult for any person to work and not need some sort of child care. I am hoping you have thought of this and have some potential solutions that will keep children from mixing with other cohorts in a child care setting. Thank you for your consideration. Kristen Dennis, I strongly support our children going back to school in person with as much possible. I'm very concerned with not only our kids' emotional and social well-being, but also their academic well-being. I'm incredibly impressed by our teachers' online instruction this school year, but it is not a natural way for a child to learn, and there is no way to avoid big gaps in their education. Additionally, distance learning has had a huge impact on our home, with two full-time working parents trying to balance the support required for our children to learn at home. Thank you for considering my comment as you make this important decision. Jeffrey and Kealoha McKee, dear Honorable SLC-USD board members, as grandparents and caregivers for two SLC-USD students, we are shocked and dismayed that you are planning to have students begin attending in-person classes this November during the COVID-19 pandemic and the beginning of flu season. This is a plan filled with the possibility for increased COVID-19 illnesses and deaths. Please reconsider. If you carry on with this despite recommendations of national health experts to the contrary, please require 1. COVID-19 testing of all staff, instructors, administration, and students 2 weeks prior to school opening with results verified. 2. Approved masks be always worn by everyone on campus. 3. Frequent hand washing before, several times during, and after school before release to caregivers. 4. Large bottles of hand sanitizer on every desk. Thank you for your consideration during this dire worldwide health pandemic. Celia Uribe, distinguished school board members and school district leaders. My concern, shared by many in our C.L. Smith community, including our dedicated and determined staff, is for the mental well-being of our families, some of whom are close to breaking point. These are families who struggle not just with the academic deficit created by distance learning, but are also enduring the emotional and physical burden of economic and food insecurity and an increasingly stressful home environment. Schools such as ours are a lifeline for so many vulnerable and at-risk children. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our comments and for your tremendous efforts to ensure a safe reopening of our schools. Valerie Hoppel, good evening. My name is Valerie Hoppel, and I am a parent of a first and fifth grader at C.L. Smith Elementary School. First and foremost, I want to say a huge thank you to the incredible teachers, staff, and our amazing principal who have gone above and beyond every day to be there for our children. My husband and I feel incredibly blessed by our daughter's teachers and what they do each day. I know I couldn't do it. As we navigate through this unprecedented time, I wish there was a right answer for everyone, but unfortunately, there is not. Every parent feels differently about their comfort level, about sending their children back to school, and that's okay. None of us have ever navigated anything like this before, and we were all just trying to make the best decision for our kids. Personally, I am terrified of the virus. Ask my children. They are used to multiple temperature checks throughout the day. But do you know what I'm most terrified of? The mental well-being of my six-year-old. She is an incredibly social, outgoing child who loves school. She misses school. We battle each day with convincing her to do Zoom school. She has an amazing teacher who she loves, but our six-year-old is physically making herself sick with stress and worry about doing school each day. She worries if she'll be a good reader, if she'll have friends whenever it gets back to school. Will the virus ever go away? We are lucky that we have food on the table, a roof over our heads, and two jobs, even though that hasn't been the case over the last 7 months. So if our six-year-old daughter from a pretty stable home has this much worry and stress, what about other kids out there and their mental well-being? I know SLC-USD and the board will make the best decision that will take in consideration the health and safety of all children and staff, and then as parents we can make our own decision. I do hope that the district and board take into account the potential rising cases after the holidays and would look at starting the school year on Tuesday, January 19th. But no matter what is decided, the mental health of our children must be addressed. 5 months ago, I would have said the kids will be fine. They are resilient. But I do not say that anymore. I'm worried, very worried, if we don't start making sure all our students are mentally okay, what will happen to them? Thank you for your time. Lindsay Herring. Good evening, distinguished school board members and school district leaders.
My name is Lindsay Herring, and I am a C.L. Smith Elementary parent. My family and I extend our sincere gratitude for your work and the opportunity to share our thoughts. We are hopeful that an in-person return to school will be an option in January, though we support the idea of a mid-month start given the holiday break. We also appreciate the work that has gone into providing a robust virtual learning plan. Staff and families deserve options and support in making the choice that fits their needs. We know you are working to ensure that outcome. Our experience at C.L. Smith has been wonderful, and this challenging time has only reaffirmed what we know to be true about the teachers and staff. They exceed expectations in working to reach and teach our kids, but the hardship we see in our school community cannot be remedied in a virtual setting. The most vulnerable among us, some of my kids' peers and friends, are suffering. And while our sons in fourth and second grade struggle with distance learning, we recognize that there are far harder circumstances. For some, the loss of in-person school has compromised their emotional, social, and physical well-being on a daily basis. In discussing and planning for school reopening, the health and safety of every teacher, staff, and student is of paramount importance. Equally important is the current health and safety of some of our most vulnerable students. For some, the potential harm of COVID-19 is less severe than the trauma endured through school closures. School is essential and not just for educational pursuits. It is at the foundation of a functioning society and vital to a culture of care. We write simply to advocate for the safe reopening of schools so that they can serve all our families, especially those who are disproportionately affected by the pandemic and school closures. Thank you for your consideration. Kim Wishon. Thank you to the members of the school board for your work and dedication. Being that I am the founder of Wishing Well School, a 501c3 nonprofit elementary school in Los Osos, I know firsthand how challenging your jobs can be. Our school obtained a waiver from the County Public Health Department, and we have been open since September. I have two children who attend Morro Bay High School, and I coach the varsity girls soccer team at Morro Bay High. I know you are juggling so much, but I would encourage you to please open schools. These developmental years for our children are so important, and they need the structure, guidance, inspiration, and learning that school provides. When making your decisions, please put the children first. It is possible to open schools safely. Please don't let labor unions, money, and fear dictate your decision. Our kids are depending on you. Thank you for considering my comment. All right, those are all the written comments. I'm going to have one more drink of water. And I have a list of speakers, and I'm going to call them in the order in which they signed in. So first, and then I'll be advised if they're still here. Jason Browning. Paul Phillips.
No.
Sydney Beckett. All right. And let's see. Then Emily Capilano.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'm Emily Capilano, and I've spoke a few times. I'm the president of the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, and I just wanted to say thank you to all the school board members tonight for making time to listen to all of our comments on this very important issue. We recently had a survey of our members, and we had a 71% response from them, and it was just about reopening. And so I just want to give you the results of that survey and a couple other takeaways. First of all, in elementary, our survey results showed that 63.8% of our elementary school members are comfortable returning to in-person instruction. In secondary, it's a little bit flipped. 68.8% are not comfortable returning to in-person instruction in January. One of the things that we asked our secondary was looking at those two plans that a lot of discussion's been around, and 59.8% prefer the all periods half class every other day model. We also decided tonight at our site rep meeting to conduct a follow-up survey, and we'll send you those results so that you can have them prior to your decision. Also, we just some main concerns that have come out. We've had a lot of discussion with our admin at sites and with this district administration. Have been including a lot of discussions, which has been great, and we really value that, being a part of that. But one of the things that's really concerning our members is masks. We really would, and I've talked to Kim McGrath about this, we really would like to hear the word mandatory be used, and be used solely, not expectation, but mandatory. And we just feel that this sets a message. We know other districts are doing it around us, and they have some agreements also about if parents can't do that, or if students can't do that, or don't agree with mandatory, that maybe they should stay in distance learning. We also understand that there are exceptions to that due to disabilities and other health needs. Also, there's been some talk tonight, and we also had some discussion, the reopening in January. Currently, it's been discussed that possibly it would be later for secondary due to the semester, but a lot of the elementary school members, and I don't have a statistic on this yet, but it will be part of our next survey, they're worried about coming back January 5th. They feel they need some more time so that we don't become super spreaders, because even though students don't show a lot of symptoms, they could be asymptomatic, they can bring it back to their families, and they can bring it back to their the families and can take it to their different work sites, and we just worry that that could be the possibility. So thank you for what you're doing, and I appreciate you considering some of these concerns, and we'll touch base with you in the future.
Thank you. Rebecca Russell.
Hi. I have spoken a couple of times at prior meetings, so I hope that I'm still allowed to speak, even though I've spoke at prior meetings. I wasn't totally clear on that, but I just wanted to point out that it's pretty clear that the majority of elementary parents and elementary school staff believe that it's time to have the kids back in the classroom. At this point, it is time for the board to figure it out right away. A lot of parents that I've spoke to are pretty fed up with 2 weeks and then 2 weeks and then 2 weeks. We want our kids back in class. So it's time for the parents who have elected you guys are expecting you to figure out how to make it happen. That means that you might have to hire teachers, and you might have to utilize every single space that the district has access to and get the children back in class right away. We are happy to give you the 2 weeks after the holidays for a safe start, but our kids need to be in school, and we're really done with this waiting around. And if you need to, you need to consider quality over quantity when it comes to your requirement for instructional hours. If you need to cut back on that requirement, that's what needs to happen so our children can get into the class and have some quality in their education. Frankly, at this point, perhaps you need to let the individual school sites be a part of the solution for their students and their sites. One size is not going to fit all. And the parents are very frustrated. Thank you.
Thank you. Sydney Beckett. Is she here now?
Yep.
Okay. Sydney, did you want to address the board?
She's muted.
If so, you are muted. Okay. We will move on to Sarah Flickinger.
Sydney, did you want to address? Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead, and Sarah Flickinger will get to you next.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Sydney Beckett, and I'm a junior at Morro Bay High School.
I'd like to start by saying I know this is an extremely hard decision to make, and there's a lot of factors that come with this decision. As a student who's normally balancing sports, academics, and other activities, this online school has been a whole new category of challenging. I'm very privileged to have a supportive family, but I'd like the board to consider those who don't, like those who have multiple generations living with them in a small apartment, or those who have Wi-Fi that is barely allowing them to open Zoom, or who live in an abusive household. School is a safe place for these students, and Zoom doesn't allow this. Not only that, but although I know the teachers are working their hardest, Zoom is not a place that allows learning to be easy, makes learning easy. Zoom doesn't allow for easily asking questions, one-on-one time for students to feel comfortable having a teacher re-explain something. I have always been an eager learner, but during Zoom, I find myself finishing my school day without learning anything. I do what I'm supposed to do, but I'm not learning, and school is supposed to be about learning. I fear for the future of students when going off to college, and especially those who aren't learning to read or write. I understand that the safety of students and staff members is at risk if we go back, but I feel that, number one, the school should give an option to go back or not so students feel safe, and that this is a risk that should be taken with caution on a day-to-day basis. But if going back to school means that students will continue learning, which should be the goal of school, it should be taken. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Sarah Flickinger.
Hi, and thank you all for all of the time that you have put into this. My name is Sarah Flickinger. I'm a parent of a fifth grader here in the district, and I recognize the very real needs of many in our community for to have the schools reopened, and their concerns are valid, as are the concern of families like ours who might not feel comfortable sending members back into the classroom. I wanted to make a point to echo the concerns regarding the integrity of the data for the parent survey and the results and the usage of those results. It was a survey that people could take as many times as they wanted, including more than once from the same link. I did test it a little bit just because my background is in public relations and data integrity. And so that was of interest to me to understand how dependable are these results. I do feel as a parent that masks should be required and enforceable on the campuses, that teachers have the ability to send a student home if they refuse to comply with a mask requirement. The distance learning is not the same as the virtual learning program. And this has been an issue for our family in that, you know, if we have to opt for virtual learning because we're not comfortable going back to the classroom, the virtual learning that our daughter would be getting is different than what she is getting currently in the distance learning program. It's my understanding that there's less daily teacher contact in that scenario. And so I think figuring out a way to continue a distance learning type model that does have daily teacher contact and such as we move forward for those families who maybe full virtual learning where it's the, you know, weekly and just teacher check-ins and that stuff, maybe that doesn't work for them. But having the daily instruction and remaining connected to their individual school sites is important. Because also when our kids do re-enter with their peers, we want to, you know, we don't want there to be a stigma for the kids who have risks in their family. And so they couldn't re-enter the school at the same time as everyone else. We don't want those children stigmatized or excluded from their peer group when they do re-enter back in. So those are things that if we can facilitate connections as some choose to remain in distance, I think that that's an important thing for ensuring a smooth motion forward when everyone is back in the schools together. And I think that covers everything. Oh, and one more point on the surveys. It would be good if we could demonstrate that all of the different socioeconomic and categorical groups, such as disability and those things, are represented statistically in statistically significant returns within the survey. So, like, if a certain percentage are
low. Thank you. Thanks very much for your comments. We appreciate them. Thanks. Right. At this time, it appears that we have no other public comments. And so we'll come back to the board. I would remind the public that the board will be meeting to discuss this again at a closed session, or a study session on November 12th. And then we will be making a decision at our next regularly scheduled board meeting on November 17th. So back to the board for discussion on reopening. I know many questions were asked during Kim's presentation, or is there anything else at this time? All right, I see nothing. And if that's the case, then we move on with our agenda. The only other item left, I believe, is board advance agenda. Anything for the advance agenda? Okay, and board reports. Any board reports this evening? Mark?
Yeah, I've been hearing, thanks very much, Elle. I've been hearing tonight all the other districts are opening, you should open. And I think it's a kudos to our staff, to my fellow board members, to the families. I think we need to look at, you know, what this district did do. So I'm looking at the Tribune, and it says, on November 2nd, the Paso Robles School District will bring back transitional kindergarten. San Luis Coastal brought back pre-K, special education September 8th. October 1st, we started athletics. October 15th, we brought back the second phase of special education. On October 29th, we had high school groups coming back. On November 2nd, we are going to bring back pre-K. Pack Beach has some kids. The board has really very carefully done this and has quite honestly been out in front on this. And I just want to just say it. And I just really thank everybody that's been involved in it. Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you. All right. It looks like at this time, this concludes our meeting. And go watch some election returns. Thank you so much.
Too slow, guys. Too slow.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I've been impressed with this meeting.
Thank you.